I'm taking a few days off.
Good. Great. Grand. Wonderful.
We'll see you guys next Friday.
Get him out of here. Get out. Get him out of here.
Enjoy your 4 days off from me.
Out. Out. Out.
See you in a week.
I think they like you, Steve.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
I think I used too much sunblock. Four days of golf in Florida, and I walk in, and none of you said, hey, nice tan.
Hey, nice tan, Steve.
Well, I don't say it now if you don't believe it.
Well, I thought you used SPF 80.
It was SPF 247. Hi, kids. Hope you had a nice week. How was the week? Everybody good?
It's good, yeah.
Okay. It's fantastic.
Vanderbilt looks younger. What happened up there?
Hi. I'm actually doing an Instagram Live, too, on WGN Radio's Instagram account.
But nice.
Welcome back.
By the way, don't tell Vanderbilt I just said that. She looks fabulous.
She does.
Thanks for that. What are we doing? Like a driverless car situation in the news? Where's Grzanich?
Here he is.
There he is. Are we going all Google driverless news now? What's going on, Steve?
It's an autonomous newsroom.
All right.
Flippy.
How are you doing?
Flippy's
welcome back.
Over.
Thank you. Good to see everybody. Man, we got a busy show. Busy show today. Apparently, we're going to have peace in the Korean Peninsula, peace in the Middle East. We got peace all over. Well, I got a peace. And lots to talk about. So let's crank it up with the top six right now.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Your kicks. Get your kicks.
With the top six at six, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Not on the top six, I have United Airlines baggage questions.
Oh, okay.
More on that later. Donald Trump will become the first sitting U.S. president to meet with a North Korean leader in the 70-year history of the DPRK after accepting an invitation by Kim Jong-un to discuss the future of Pyongyang's nuclear program. We believe it'll occur in the Dells, right in front of a water slide. No, we don't know where it's going to occur. It's got some very good possibilities and some incredibly frightening possibilities. We'll break it down with experts and some that aren't so expert later on in the program. Next, the woman, check this story out now. The woman who accused State Rep. Robert Rita of domestic battery 16 years ago said on Thursday that her father pleaded in vain with House Speaker Michael Madigan to intervene after Rita's arrest and do something. Michael Madigan would not intervene. So says the woman about her father. Now, is her father no longer alive? Can we look into that? Because I don't know what the story there is. If he's no longer with us, because she's speaking on behalf of her dad. And obviously you'd like to hear from her father as well in that story. Next. In Illinois, town celebrates says Trump's tariffs prompt U.S. Steel to bring jobs back. Granite City residents and business owners say that although the number of jobs returning when U.S. Steel restarts ops may seem like a drop in the bucket, it's a big deal for their town, and that's a good thing. Obviously, there's two sides to that steel story as well, but that's a positive for a lot of people. Netflix talking to Barack and Michelle Obama about developing new programs for Netflix. This is a good idea. It's a very good idea. You know, it gives them a platform to talk about stuff they want to talk about. And Netflix is fast becoming the most watched thing anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what the numbers are like. Is Netflix coming close to the broadcast network numbers yet? Because cable, you get a 2 on cable, you're a rock star.
Yeah.
I don't know what the equivalent is on the subscription services.
I don't know if you found this in Florida, but more and more, Netflix is there on your hotel television.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's become a regular go-to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, it's changed the hotel rate. I mean, I was staying at a Red Roof Inn. It was $450 a night, so that's yeah. A little different. No. Oh, and there's this. Bitcoin classes coming to Chicago area universities. You go to DePaul? Cryptocurrency has worked its way into a class called Foundations of Finance. I'm not carrying any Bitcoins currently, but this will teach you all about Bitcoin and about Ripple. And about the other hot cryptocurrencies.
Not Ripple the drink, by the way. No.
How do you pay the course fee?
Oh, wouldn't it be cool if you could pay it in crypto? Huh? I was in a band called Cryptocurrency. Next. Make America Vote Again. Early voting is underway. Let's go live to Andre at one of the early voting stations.
Yes.
Oh, there wouldn't be an early voting station. I guess you just You just send in your ballot.
Well, yeah, or you can go in person to any of the early voting locations.
Is that where you are now?
That's where I am now, okay. Yes, at the one in the Loop.
Okay.
And there's nobody here yet, but they're going to be a swarm of people.
How will
today.
I know what hours they're open?
You can easily go to...
Illinois.gov?
There you go.
Is that it? I don't know.
Yeah, you can go to the Secretary of State's office. Just honestly, it's so easy now. If you Google early voting in Illinois, everything will pop up right there for you. And you have to find a location, too, because every location has different hours.
There is no reason not to vote. None. And we are making America vote again because we need heavy voter turnout. I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. Mm-hmm. Just vote.
I have a friend who voted last Sunday, too. So they're open on Sundays as well. Can't be an excuse.
Now, the struggle of those who claim they're independent, like me. Remember, I really, really think Madigan's destroying Illinois. He's a Democrat. I really, really think Trump is trouble. He's a Republican. So I believe that puts me in the middle. Having said that, you got to pick a ballot.
Yes, you do.
So my advice to you is to do one of two things. And this drives me crazy to even say this. I was always against this. You can vote defensively.
Mm-hmm.
You can go out and you can say, I'm tired of Mike Madigan being Speaker of the House. I'm going to vote for somebody who is a Democrat who's got the guts to stand up to him and won't vote to retain him as Speaker.
Right.
For instance, that's an example. Or you can go out and say, all right, I'm independent, but I like what these Republicans stand for,
mm-hmm.
or what these Democrats stand for. And since there's more than a couple of them, I'm going to pick a Republican ballot versus a Democrat ballot.
Right.
Or vice versa.
Pitt Brady made a good point yesterday, too. He said, he said, if you want to vote, say for the AG's race in Illinois, which is very crowded right now on the Democratic side.
I understand Erica Harrell was in here.
Yeah, she was great. So yeah. you want to vote for her. You're Republican, but you're thinking, no, you know what? I'm going to vote Democrats. When you select a Democratic ballot, it's no longer considered declaring a party. You're just simply selecting
for that primary.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Doesn't make you that person.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
That's your top six. Lose next. And by the way, if you want to be Lose first caller, number to call is 312-981-7200. Sure, we got stuff for you to win. And you have to have a problem you want to talk about. Something going on with your house. I need to see what's going on at my house. Tore up the kitchen completely.
Did you really?
Well, not me.
Did your new project?
Professionals come in. So hi to Bill Conforti and everybody at Cobblestone who are tearing my house apart. Not the double wide in East St. Louis.
No, it's a different one.
The other one.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
It's Lou's First Call with Lou Manfredini and Steve Cochran. Brought to you by American Weathermakers.
American Weathermakers, we won't be comfortable until you are.
It's the time of the show.
Lou Manfredini at this point usually is live at Channel 9. Is that where I might find you today?
I am.
Because you're going to be on TV in a little bit talking about what?
I have a preview to some items that are coming to the International Home and Houseware Show in Chicago in a couple weeks. Three different items. Two of them end with the word pot.
Instapot.
Yeah, that's one of them.
I have one of those.
And? You never use it.
Medical pot.
No.
The same?
No. Insta. Oh, no, I said Insta.
Yeah.
Turbo.
What's a turbo pot?
Oh, my gosh. Can I tell you something?
Yeah, what's a turbo pot?
Okay, my wife, you've met my wife.
Lovely woman.
She's a lovely woman, but my wife, very dear friend of mine, has given my wife a nickname, and my wife is not one that likes nicknames.
He calls your wife Turbo?
Nope. Oh. He calls her Missouri.
What? Why?
Because my wife is all about, don't tell me what you're going to do, show me what you're going to do.
Ah, the show me state.
Yeah, so she, actually affectionately accepts this because that's exactly who she is.
Okay.
This company, the TurboPot, sends me this stuff. I get sent this stuff all the time.
Yeah.
And they're telling me, oh my gosh, you can cook and boil water faster than you've ever done before. I'm like, why do I need this in my life? This is dumb. And it was sitting at on the counter, and my wife's like, what is that? I go, oh, that's a turbo pot. I got to check it out. And then I left, and I went out of town. So, of course, I leave her with the thing. I come back the next day. I see the turbo pot has been washed, and it's on the little rack next to the sink.
She used it.
I go, what did you use the turbo pot? She turns to me, and she said, it's amazing. Now, for my wife to say it's amazing, I'll tell you something. In almost 28 years of marriage, she's never said that to me.
What? Well, maybe you're not turbo.
Nor am I amazing.
What does the turbo pot do that the Instapot doesn't, or vice versa?
Okay, so this is just a pot, Steve. It's like a frying pan or a pot that you would boil water in. But okay. Now I want you to imagine this. Remember years ago when you used to cut the grass?
Yeah, many years ago.
Do you remember the air-cooled engine on the mower? On the mower, yeah. Has little metal fins because it's an air-cooled engine.
Sure.
They took that theory and put it on the bottom of the pots. So there's like these metal fins, right. Almost look like mini blinds, right. That are standing at attention.
Right.
And that creates this almost heat Venturi
effect.
Phenomenon. Honest to goodness, I did a video. It's on my Facebook page where we took a cup of water in two pots, a very good Calphalon, you know, heavy duty pot that everyone uses and trusts. And I put the turbo pot next to it, and it boiled the water in a minute and a half.
So it more effectively uses the temperature needed to achieve what's in the pot.
But get this, where it really shines is as a commercial product. This is really nice stuff.
Yes, yes.
Restaurants in Southern California, if they use this, can get a rebate from the gas company because it'll cut their gas usage by up to 20%.
Well, this turbo pot, look at this. How much? $1,000?
No.
$15,000.
No, this is the thing.
$1 million.
It starts at $49.
So it's
and it's really well-made stuff. The homeowner version of it goes from like $49 to like $125.
Nobel Prize for the turbo pot inventor.
I know.
Listen, if your wife said it's great, it must be great.
She said it was amazing.
Yeah, she never said that about you.
Never.
We got a guy on the phone who wants to talk to you. It's Mark and Carrie. What are your troubles, Mark?
They have to do with GFCI plugs.
Oh, me too. The old GFCI plugs. What is that, Lou?
It's a ground fault interrupter circuit.
Of course it is.
A circuit interrupter.
All right. So what do you need, Mark?
Okay. So I wanted to change one out in my kitchen above the countertop.
Yep.
So, of course, I wanted to turn off the power. So I plugged in a little tabletop lamp into the outlet I was going to change.
Good so far.
Went down to my circuit panel. You know, flipped the right circuit. Went up, checked my light. It was off. So, great. So, I start to unplug the lamp, start disassembling the plug to swap it out. And as I'm holding it, I got shocked. So, I'm trying to figure out how can power still be running through that kind of circuit if I've turned off the circuit breaker.
Did that particular receptacle, does it feed other receptacles? In other words, when you pulled that off, how many wires were connected to it?
Two.
Just two?
No, I'm lying. Four.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess it does feed another one.
Right. So, my guess is there's a back feed coming from one of the other ones that something is wired incorrectly at another device.
Great.
Yeah, congratulations.
So he needs an electrician.
Well, I mean, so, look, I'm always very leery about giving people electrical advice because this is one of the areas...
Yeah, where I don't want you killing any of my listeners.
You can get hurt, you can cause a fire, and so you really have to have a healthy respect for understanding what's going on with it. But, I mean, in this respect, that one with the circuit off, you know, obviously you take a tester now and you figure out where that circuit is coming from, and there's got to be a backfeed from another device.
In other words, hire an electrician.
Right.
But the good news, Mark, is I have an April Air Wi-Fi thermostat for you, allowing you to adjust the temperature of your home's air on your smartphone. It's brought to you by American Weathermakers, home of the 60-Minute Men. Call 855-955-HVAC.
And that's low voltage.
Yes. You could not even hurt yourself, Mark.
Yeah, right.
Right, Mark, hold on.
Thank you very much.
Oh, I thought Mark maybe was electrocuted during that read. Very relieved. All right, one last question. We're going to let you go quickly here today because we have to stay on time because I'm back and Sandberg is running the show.
Yeah, I actually got a text message about that, and I laughed. I never do LOL, but I did.
When is a good time to put down grass seed?
Not now.
Excellent. There you go. That's Lou. He's on TV in a minute. He's on the radio tomorrow. Well, how soon can you put down grass seed?
Goodbye. No, not until we're end of March, maybe April.
Okay, there you go. That's our friend Lou Manfredini, and we're back in just a moment with the headlines from Andrea, and then a special Friday before school edition of Chuck Todd. Also, Michael Asiello later, because I don't know if you heard, President Trump's going to talk to Kim Jong-un, like in the same room and stuff. Oh, boy. It's coming up on 720 WGN.
I'm friends with the monster.
Oh, he's a monster.
I'm sitting there tweeting.
Monster.
Big, big, big tweeting.
I love you. It's a guy, but I love you.
Well done, Joe. Well, you know, you take two guys who would have been better suited to maybe have a toddler play date, but the difference is you put toddlers in a play date together, maybe they break a toy. You can't put these two toddlers in a play date together, they might break the planet.
And no toys.
I'm not worried. It's fine. Chuck Todd joins us from Meet the Press, MTP Daily, the 1947 podcast, and I appreciate your time. Chuck.
Thank you, Steve.
What do you think? Play date for these two? Right analogy?
I'm not taking that bait. look, this is one of those that leaves you both speechless and yet not shocked at the same time. This is sort of classic Trump, right? He believes he has supreme self-confidence, and he believes that no one can out-negotiate him. No one that he alone, I mean, he said it at his convention, he alone can fix it. We really saw sort of that part of Trump, that cocky Trump this week. He's got multiple people, majority basically of people that talk to him, trying to talk him out of these tariffs. He does it anyway. And then this, I mean, to agree immediately in May, no preconditions. Who in the Trump administration, who in any administration has that much familiarity with the North up there to feel comfortable putting a president of the United States in an unknown situation? So few Americans have ever interacted with Kim Jong-un. I mean, who's going to tell Trump how, you know, well, watch out for this or he does this? I mean, this is as high risk as it gets, but that's why Trump did it. It's like the more risky you tell him something is, the more likely he'll do it. He's touching the stove.
But that's the problem, right? Because you can blow up a hotel deal in the Philippines or whatever with a Trump name on the side of it. Yeah. That affects a lot of people. It's not a great thing. But we're talking about the safety of the American people, the safety of the planet.
Let's look at it from another side, though. At the end of the day, Kim Jong-un's coming to the table. And he thinks now his saber rattling is one of the reasons that it worked, that the tougher sanctions are working. And maybe they are. You know, got him to the table, but God, there's so many unanswered questions. Where's China in all this?
Right.
And why is it that it's the South Koreans that are mediating between the North and the United States when normally it's the United States is supposed to be playing the role of mediator between, say, the North and the South? So there's a lot of unanswered questions on that front as well.
All right, let's forget about all the skepticism that exists out there that this was a really exciting dodge for Trump to get the porn star off the headlines and everything else that's negative.
Well, that was amazing. I mean, he was at another colossal, terrible week.
Right.
And this absolutely puts a bow on it in a way that at least shoves that story aside for at least a couple hours.
So here's the thing. These are the two leaders, crazy as they may or may not be. If it doesn't work, where do you go from here?
It's a great question. You know, look, I think that it's clear to me that South Korea and this new president was going to tackle North Korea in a much different way, wants to open up channels, wants diplomacy. So, you know, maybe we're all underestimating the South here and all this, that they've got this more wired than we've given them credit for. So I think we had let's learn more about how well these talks have gone for the South. They obviously, you know, that's another thing that puts the United States in this sort of where I think the president had to do this. The South clearly wants him to do this or they wouldn't have brought the invitation here.
Andrea, last word before Chuck runs.
I got to ask you, I thought it was strange that Rex Tillerson kind of stepped into this, too. On one hand, you have the Trump side saying, hey, we did this, you know, giving themselves pats on the back. And then you have Rex Tillerson getting up there saying, these are just talks, not negotiations. So that was bizarre to me that he stepped into that fray.
Well, I think that's right. They're trying to set some parameters around this and set some expectations. I mean, look, you know, when Nixon went to China, Henry Kissinger secretly went to China, you know, half dozen times before it happened. So we may not have a national security advisor in less than 2 weeks. Is he really going to change now with a summit coming up in May? By the way, we still don't have an ambassador to South Korea.
Right.
Good time to prepare for a summit.
Yeah. Other than that, we should be good. Look, talk is better than preemptive strikes and all the other things that, that have been discussed or thrown around. That's all good. But what are the chances here, Chuck, that this ends with, okay, we'll freeze it where it is right now? Because where it is right now is they got the nukes.
Well, look, there's part of me that thinks it ain't going to happen in May. I mean, this could, they've got to figure out even where to hold this thing. I wouldn't be surprised if this doesn't happen until that it's delayed before it happens, because they have a sticking point about where, what location to pick, you know, where to do it. Is there an island that can pick somewhere in the Pacific? I think we've got a lot of prep work to do before we even start thinking about the actual summit.
Branson, Missouri is nice. Theaters, lots
there
of places they could hang out.
Because
middle of the country. What's on Meet the Press Sunday?
Well, I'm scrambling now.
I'll bet you are.
We had one plan, and now we got another one to fulfill here.
Appreciate you jumping on today. Enjoy the weekend. We'll see you
all
Sunday.
Right,
there you
Thanks,
go.
Sir.
That's Chuck Todd getting ready for a brand new show. Basically, they have a show planned. And now they don't have a show planned because they got to replan the show that they thought they had planned.
Call Rex Tillerson. He'll step in. And
you know what? It's harder in TV because there's 95 people, involved. Who am I kidding? And Meet the Press is probably 400 people. And I'm not kidding. 400 people involved, and everybody wants to make sure their opinion's known.
Oh, my gosh. There's a producer, usually, for a segment for every hour. Sometimes
sure.
Every half
every segment.
Hour.
Yep. Yeah,
every
yeah,
segment.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. We just need one, because that's all we need.
Samberg, have I screwed something up? I've only been here 45, 48 minutes.
As a radio producer, I would argue that it is not more difficult for television producers.
Difficult as in there's too many cooks in the kitchen. They make it harder than it needs to be. Yeah. You're married to a TV guy. You know how the TV people go, oh, my God, how am I going to get a half hour on tonight? How am I going to get an hour on tonight?
I know.
Do
and
four
I sit,
a day.
I sit there and think, I'm producing 4 hours. And things get changed. Same, all that happens. Blow things up, move people around. That darn president of ours talks. I got to take people off the schedule today. So,
and producing well. Producing well, too, by the way.
Exactly. And all while being in a great mood.
You had me till great mood.
You know why? It's Friday, and there's pizza involved.
I know.
That's coming later.
Yeah. And it's my stepson's birthday.
Yes, and the party's tonight.
Yes, but that's a secret.
Yeah, not that party. The other party. That I was talking about, the thing that I'm going to.
So he'll be awake soon, and there'll be no more mentions of a party.
No. Yeah, well, no, that's a different party. Let's do the Express here. You know, when the Hawks lose, it's a quickie. It's sponsored by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing.
3-2 is the final score.
Okay. That's last night. The Hurricanes beat the Blackhawks 3-2. Coach Q is going to be joining us this morning at 8:40. Mm-hmm. If anybody listening has a question for Coach Q, 312-981-7200 is the number. Feel free to text those in anytime this morning.
Nothing he likes more than coming on with us the morning after a loss, right?
Mm-hmm. I think he's been a great sport.
Yeah.
Yes, he
about
has
the
been.
Tough stretch they've had.
No question.
And you know what this proves, Dave? In hockey, goalie is really important.
Mm-hmm.
You need a goalie.
But you know what?
You better have
J.F. Berube played pretty well last night. Made 37 saves. Wasn't his fault.
Nope. But you still better have a goalie.
You better.
You guys, I would argue.
It's one of the most important positions on the ice.
I would argue we could be a bright spot in Coach Q's day.
You know what? That's a good point.
You know?
That is a good point. That's a good point.
Yes.
Texter says, Steve, is it possible Kim Jong-un wants Trump to look good for the election cycle? With Trump in office, our country is destroying itself from the inside out, and he and Putin both recognize that, and they like it. Boy, that's a plot twist, but as crazy as the world is, I suppose, I'm certainly not going to poo-poo it. But if you plus-minus pros and cons this thing, let's talk about this for a second. For those of you just waking up who missed the news yesterday, it seems that there was a meeting going on in the White House with the South Korean delegation that had nothing to do with the president. The president jumped in on the meeting. At the meeting, it was made clear by the South Korean delegation to express to the president that the North Koreans, and particularly Kim Jong-un, were willing to meet. Donald Trump took that and ran with it. He got on the phone with the president of South Korea, who said, is he ready to meet the president of South Korea? As we understand it, president of South Korea said, yes, he is ready to meet. We're going to announce today at 7 o'clock Washington time that he's ready to meet. Trump then goes to the briefing room where the press briefing happens every day with Sarah Huckabee, I'll tell the truth eventually, Sanders, opens a door, calls over Hallie Jackson from NBC and a couple other people. This is the president, like peeking through a door. It's like a little pocket door.
All right, like the keyhole?
Yeah, peeks through the door and says, 7 o'clock tonight, big announcement, South Korea, pass it on. And that's only a slight exaggeration. That's how it went down. So then the announcement happens at 7 o'clock from South Korea. And what we now know is President Trump and Kim Jong-un are planning on meeting sometime before May to discuss not ending the world. The goal for the United States, complete denuclearization of North Korea. The goal for North Korea seems to be international recognition.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, and food.
Yes.
Because they don't have much. So if you plus minus pro con, pro negative this thing, positives and negatives. The good news, of course, we're talking.
Yes.
This is way better than preemptive strikes, and we'll shoot one of them targeted nukes at them.
Mm-hmm.
No. A nuke is a nuke is a nuke.
Right.
So we're talking. That's a good thing.
Talks, not negotiating.
Yeah, talks.
Right.
The IAEA inspectors would have to be able to go into North Korea without any nonsense going on and be able to inspect their nuke sites completely to determine that they are denuclearizing. That's not a real word. I just meant it. And the other piece of the good news is they need us more than we need them. They need us not to blow them up. They also need us because they need these sanctions to end.
Mm-hmm.
One of the top security officials, not the Kim Jong-un security detail, but one of the top security and military minds in North Korea, he left. He ran. He got out. And he died. When they did an autopsy on him, they found uncooked kernels of corn in his digestive tract, indicating that he was trying to find food. Like he didn't have enough to eat. So he was, you know, scrounging for food. Now, this wasn't, he was lost in the wilderness forever. This was his life in North Korea. He didn't have enough to eat. Point being, if an important official at the upper end of the government is starving, you can imagine what's happening to the rest of the people. And if there's not enough money to take care of the people at the top of that twisted food chain, literally, then they're going broke. They may run out of foreign reserves as soon as September or October. So they need these sanctions to end. That could be the main reason why Kim Jong-un would be willing to meet now. The bad side of this is, did Trump jump at this to get porn stars off the front pages? I mean,
great,
you know,
question. Hey,
it wouldn't be the first time.
No.
Wouldn't be the first time he said, look, I'll figure it out later, but I've got to change the story.
Mm-hmm.
Not understanding what a big deal this is that an American president would meet with anybody from North Korea. As I talked about Chuck Todd, what if it doesn't work? Where do you go from here?
That's a great question. And that's what Chuck Todd said, too. Where do you go from here?
It's like you
if
go.
If he
to the,
says no. And
yeah. Yeah. If the Supreme Court considers a case, you know, they're going to make a decision.
Right.
If these two get in a room with interpreters and there's not a suitable solution, I guess you could extend it. You could say, OK, we don't have a deal here. Let's talk later. But let's stop talking about blowing things up. Let's go back to our sandboxes mm-hmm. and let's figure out what we're going to do. And then we'll re-meet.
Yeah.
You would hope that's what would happen. Translators is always a dicey thing. Nobody's been in the room with a North Korean leader. So, again, Chuck brought this up. You don't know what his moves are.
Right.
You don't know what he's going to say. I mean, Washington's famous for overthink, but you don't know, you know, the physicality of what the room's going to be. You don't know what it's going to be like. And Trump, who doesn't read briefings, doesn't read bullet points mm-hmm. on paper. His own people have said this.
Right.
How are you going to get him to prepare for a meeting mm-hmm. like this?
This is not a reality show.
No. And we don't have an ambassador to South Korea. I think Chuck brought that up as well. Mm-hmm. So we don't have point people on the ground. And one of the leading experts on North Korea just retired a week ago.
No.
And then in the middle, I guess, is if they say, okay, we won't do anything else with our nukes. Well, they're already winning then.
Yeah.
Because they got the meeting, which is what Kim wants. He wants the photo op. So he's got his propaganda. But if they just freeze now, they've already got the nukes.
Yeah, so something has to be done. I know there's just talks, but there has to be a resolution from this.
You know, one other cool note to the story, I don't know if it's a cool note or not, but the North Korean leader has not met with another state leader from any other country while he's been president. He's not even met the Chinese president in person.
Yeah, and that's the thing,
right? And has never left North Korea except to go to school when he was a kid.
And that's the thing that Chuck brought up. Where's China?
Right. That's a great point.
Where's China? I mean, what happens? You know, wouldn't you like to know what President Xi of China and what Putin said when they went, what? He did what?
Now, Chuck.
Because you got to assume they were surprised by this as well. And you brought this up to Chuck. Rex Tillerson, just a couple of hours before President Trump announces this is happening, saying, no talks.
Right.
No talks. He's on the other end of the globe.
Stand down.
No talks. We're not going to have talks for a long time. And then he's sleeping. He's literally sleeping, and this happens.
Unbelievable. China's foreign minister did release a statement saying today that they hope that all parties will show political courage if they restart negotiations. That's their only way in so far.
Listen, you've got to believe that this is a positive development because they're going to be talking. I just really, really hope the president stays off Twitter about this and that he does make the meeting and that he preps for it. I know that sounds like a pretty normal list of hopes, but that's a big deal if Trump hits all of those. All right, we got to get to the news. And Steve is standing by for that right now. And this is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you've got a smart speaker, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Oh, you know what else we got to talk about today? Alexa's apparently laughing at people. Did you guys hit that this week?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to talk about
Steve
that.
Steve will play the laugh for you and who you think it might sound like.
Yeah. So if your Alexa's laughing at you, it's laughing at others as well.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
713, our next guest has lived a nightmare. No parent wants to bury their own child. It's the worst thing that can happen. But to live your life in a way that can serve the legacy of the child that you've lost is a pretty amazing thing. And I'm happy to welcome Terry Osterley to the studio. And as I told you in the hallway, I salute your courage.
Thank you, Steve.
You're trying to change a law, and we got to tell the backstory here about Chelsea a bit. But I want to know who Chelsea was before she passed. She was 24?
24,
What yes. kind of kid was she?
You know, by all accounts, I would say Chelsea was the all-American girl. very good kid, very well-rounded, heavily involved in Girl Scouts, sports.
Type of athlete?
Well, she started off with, you know, the typical for middle school of soccer and softball and basketball. And she was tall, so with her height, she chose basketball, and she stuck with it.
Funny kid? Life of the party type, or really intense and wanted to just get on with the day?
Yeah, I wouldn't say so much life of the party, but she had a way of taking over the room.
Sure.
And not to be, you know, I'm her parent, so of course I'm going to think this, but
it's okay to be biased.
Thank you. She was notoriously a beautiful girl. Parents commented on her beauty. She was smart. She just was the kind of person that when she walked into a room, you were drawn to her.
I spend a fair amount of time talking about mental health and the lack of respect that we have for the damage that mental health conditions cause in this country, whether it be depression or bipolar or anything related to that. What we need to know and what we need to accept is that everybody's going to go through periods of depression in their lives, and that many, many, many of us, and possibly the majority of the population, can suffer a chemical imbalance that needs medication and talk therapy. That can also lead to self-medication.
Correct.
Which apparently was part of Chelsea's path, right?
Exactly. You know, knowing what I know today, and unfortunately I wish I had known these things during her addiction, Chelsea, for whatever reason, chose to self-medicate. You know, as a parent, you know, we talk to our kids about alcohol and drugs and everything, but for some reason Chelsea, and I still to this day don't really know why she chose to drink. And of course, I know without a doubt that she had no idea the effect that it would have on her, especially after such a short period.
She's a kid.
She was a kid. She started drinking. She admitted it at 16 after what we'll probably go into in a little while of a some pretty bad bullying. But she I think she did that to self-medicate, but then also thinking that she would eventually stop on her own. And we all thought that as a family, that it was just a phase. Of course, we tried to work with her, and we saw it getting a little bit more serious as time went by. But no one had any idea how bad it would become. And Chelsea actually entered rehab on her own, made her own choice to enter at the age of 19. And to me, back then, I honestly thought that was a quick fix. I thought it was a done deal. She could get back to college. And I mean, that was my ignorance as a parent. But I actually went into the field of addiction. I became a case manager. I don't have that the credentials to become one, but they
have the life credentials.
Exactly. And they understood that. So they let me enter into this treatment facility. And what I learned was just, I was continually amazed. I saw Chelsea after Chelsea with every patient that came in to be assessed.
And every parent goes through the same thing you go through, and that, oh my God, thank God he or she is in treatment now. We're over the hump here. This is going to get better. My own brother, I come from a family of alcoholics. And my own brother, who's now been sober 14 years, he went through rehab and treatment 7 times.
Wow.
And we know that it takes 5, 6, 7 times before somebody can really, quote, get it.
Exactly.
It's not something you snap out of. And when you layer a mental health issue along with the alcoholism as a disease, it's a big problem. Yeah. So if we fast forward to the really dark part here, and that's, it's 2013, and Chelsea's in deep medical trouble, needing a transplant
what we would later find out, what they labeled as acute alcohol hepatitis. Oddly, about a year before Chelsea was hospitalized, she actually had a four-wheel accident. So she had and it was a major accident. She had a pin and a plate put in her shoulder. So for that year, that happened in, I think, at the end of the summer of 2012, she related a lot of the pain that she was experiencing to the shoulder, because the pain was coming from the abdomen, the back. So she and I felt the same way. I thought, well, surely it has to do with this accident.
Sure.
So she just pressed on. Chelsea was a very, very strong girl. I think it may have even gone against her. She had a high pain tolerance.
And she probably didn't want to put you through any more worry than you're already in.
Yeah, she was. I would say that was Chelsea. She never wanted anyone to worry about her. She's very independent. So anyway, during this period of recovery, so to speak, she was just trying to get better, constantly, icing her shoulder and doing what she had to do to get back into good health with her shoulder, because she was very athletic and she loved to run. Ironically, even though she had this addiction, she still was very health conscious. If that makes any sense. So,
sure. I know a lot of addicts who turn to physical activity and exercise and to feel better about themselves.
Sure.
And,
yeah,
it's the one moment of the day they feel normal.
Right, exactly. So, as time went by, the spring of 2013, the pain was getting worse. And we would always, she would just say, Mom, I just don't feel good. I'm always sick. I feel like I have the flu all the time.
So the shoulder actually led the doctors to do enough of an examination to find out the liver was the problem.
Actually, no.
Oh, no.
She was released from that doctor and, on her own. This was about maybe nine months later.
Okay.
So when the pain was getting worse, by pain, I mean in her abdomen. She was having more pain in her stomach.
Yep.
And I would also later learn, I didn't know this at the time, but she was having nosebleeds, other symptoms that, in her mind, there was no way she could add these up to know that this was leading into what would become double organ failure.
So how'd you find out?
So she went to I kept on her and on her. I said, you've got to get into the doctor. So she went into a prompt care.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I think this is important for people to hear too. Once your kid's over 21, you cannot force them to take care of themselves in a way that you would like them to take care of themselves. So
exactly.
She's 23, I guess, at this point.
Well,
right?
She was 23. And that was the battle. She just kept thinking, I'm fine, I'll get over it.
Right.
I'm just on her constantly, you've got to get into the doctor. And so I finally convinced her to go to a prompt care, even though that wasn't the ideal place to start, but she went. And things got really messy from that point on, because I think she, in some ways, she kind of fell through the cracks right from that day of entering the prompt care. He sent her over for an ultrasound, because apparently he suspected something was more wrong than she had originally thought. And the ultrasound, we later learned that would show to have retrograde blood flow. Again, these are terms I had no idea what that really meant.
Sure.
That's a pretty serious thing from what I've learned, that for a 23-year-old, you normally see that in someone much older.
So you went from discovering what this was to realizing a transplant was needed pretty quickly.
Pretty quickly. But what transpired from there was she was referred on to a gastroenterologist. And that was like the big appointment for us. What is really going on? So that occurred on May 1st of 2013. After that appointment, Chelsea, and keep in mind that her intention was to get healthy, because I really believe that Chelsea wanted to go back into rehab, but she knew she wasn't feeling well. So I think she wanted to get healthy.
And she's a kid. She's got the rest of her life to figure this out. She wants to get it done, but she knows that she's going to have time, or
exactly.
At least in her head at that point.
Exactly. That's what she just wanted to get this physical part over with, find out what's going on, and then she'll go into rehab or whatever she has to do. She had met a great guy at that point in her life, so things were really looking up for her. And so at this appointment that her boyfriend at the time, Matt, he went with her to this appointment. She admitted. She laid it all out on the table. I have an addiction. I don't feel good. She was telling her severe symptoms of nosebleeds, severe pain, joint pain. There were a couple other symptoms that even on the medical report we saw later were bolded and underlined.
Mm-hmm.
This doctor sent her home with anti-anxiety medicine and vitamins, and as the article says in the Tribune, with a strong warning to quit drinking, which just... as time went by, I was just sickened by that, because especially working in the field of addiction, you cannot go home and quit drinking on your own.
Well, and this is the thing. And let's bookmark this here, because we're going to come back and continue this story in just a second. But here's the thing. And Dr. Most would tell us this, Andre. He's talked about this before.
Yeah.
People in the medical community need to come to grips with this the same way the rest of us do, because there are doctors out there who, when they hear the word addiction or alcoholism or drugs, and go, well, I'm going to move on to people who aren't hurting themselves. You go home, you do this for yourself or that. What it leads to is a problem with the transplant laws in the state of Illinois, and frankly in the country, at a time when we have an incredible shortage of organs. And Jesse White's been on the show a million times talking about it. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to donate. We'll talk about that when we come back as well.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
We're talking with Terry Osterly. She lost her daughter, Chelsea. Chelsea needed a liver transplant when she was 24 years old. It's funny because I look at the text, and Andrea, you know this. Mm-hmm. And there's no judgment of your daughter that you haven't heard. So I know you've dealt with that and you deal with that all the time. I would ask people, as they listen to your story, to put themselves in your shoes, or if you've known or loved an alcoholic or a drug addict, put yourself in the shoes of that kid and count your blessings for the people that you have in your life that are healthy. Right. Because until you've walked in these shoes, you don't know. The same way that I didn't know, the same way that you didn't know. It's a completely unfair collection of feelings. If that's the way you feel, you're entitled to it. Turn it off. Just turn the radio off. Just go about your day, because we're here to talk about how to make this fair for everybody and not take. I talked to you about this off the air. The reason Chelsea wasn't able to get an organ was what?
She was denied, because she had not abstained from drinking, and at the time that we learned that it was too late, when we actually sent her to the hospital on May 14th, because she was, she was sent home by the gastroenterologist, and during that time frame of about 7 to 10 days, I can't quite remember the exact time frame, but she continually worsened. And if you know anything about alcohol addiction, it's something you cannot stop on your own. It has to be done under, it has to be medically managed, and it's the deadliest form of withdrawal. So to be sent home and her not knowing better, because she's under a doctor's care, she's taking the medication he prescribed, yet she's, what we would also later learn, she's going into seizures. She's shaking, and she's not sure why she's getting sick every time she's trying to quit, because her drink of choice was vodka, and she was mixing it with Gatorade. So she was getting sicker, and she was trying to stop, but trying to not be sick at the same time. When I found her, I went to her apartment one night, just having that gut feeling as a mother, and I saw how I saw her condition, and I knew. I said, we have to go to the hospital. I no longer believed that her situation did not warrant a hospital visit, and I even contacted the doctor. I saw the number on a refrigerator of this physician's office, and I contacted them that morning, and I said, you know, she's looking worse. I'm not sure what to do. Is it wise to take her to the hospital? I mean, of course, I knew it was the right thing, but they actually even tried to deter me. They said, well, you know, she probably just needs a banana bag, so, you know, you can take her if you want. I even thought, well, let's just take her just to be sure. And to learn within hours that she's in double organ failure after I was just told, you know, probably don't really have to take her. There was just no words for
that. Well, parental instinct is better than a phone diagnosis, for sure, and you were doing the right thing. But the important thing, I think you just said as well, that people need to understand is when you're in the throes of addiction, it doesn't matter how hard you want to recover yourself, you're in no shape to decide what's best for you. You absolutely need medical help. And I would encourage anyone, if you can get someone, I don't care how old they are, to medical help, do it as fast as you can.
Absolutely. You know, looking at Chelsea's, looking back, I mean, again, Chelsea, this was a short time frame. This was drinking from 16 up until 23.
Yep.
I still struggle to understand that today. And I think some of the physicians involved did, too, how this could have such a pervasive effect on her health when you see people drinking their entire lives. So, you know, there's always that question, was something else wrong with her? The transplant team did start to question, could she have some sort of an autoimmune disorder? And there's probably some things we'll never know. There were tests sent off to Mayo. As far as I know, everything came back negative, and everything seemed to be pointing directly to alcohol. And of course, that's where everything came into play. Once Chelsea was hospitalized in mid-May of 2013, it was just the battle began. You know, and we were told right off the bat that. Actually, you know, one doctor told me it was really bad. This was very bad. If she, and I remember this day so well, and I almost at that point remember Matt and I didn't believe him. I didn't want to hear it.
Of course not.
But he said, you know, she's going to die. He screamed this to me in the hallway. And he wasn't a doctor involved in her care at the time. So I actually kind of thought, well, I think this doctor might be a little, you know, I just didn't have a lot of faith in him. And I thought, there's no way. I would not accept that. And I, you know, for me as a mother, I ran down the hall of the hospital because I wanted to get a prayer chain going. I wanted to contact everybody I could to get the support and the help that we needed for her. And then I was told in the next couple of days, I had a lot of mixed messages from doctors. Many doctors said that she's young and she's strong, so they had great hope that she was going to pull out of this. And I believe that.
But eventually you'd get to the organ transplant need here, and the wall is, and I'm going to ask you to stay another segment if you don't mind, because I want to talk about the program you're doing.
Right.
But the wall is you have to be sober for a certain period of time to even be considered for an organ transplant. Mm. So you have somebody who's got the potential for recovery if she gets a healthy organ who won't be getting that healthy organ. Andre will pick that up too.
Yep.
After we come back from the headlines. More coming up. Do you have a website you want to tell people about, by the way?
I do. It's still under construction, but it's changeforchelsea.org. And that's change, the number 4, Chelsea.org.
Up and running, how soon do you think?
You can view it right now, but there's, you know, we have a lot more to add to it. So it's definitely viewable at this point. Yeah.
All right, and you'll get a sense, too, of the story as you get in and out of the car this morning. More coming up. It's 7:34 break, and then Andre on 720 WGN. Terry Osterley is here. Her daughter Chelsea died after a battle with double organ failure that was linked to her addiction problem. There's a thing called the six-month rule where, as I understand it, you have to be clean for 6 months to even be considered for an organ transplant. And even then, you may not get it. So we've talked a lot about the organ transplant piece of this. There's hope to change the law. But in the limited time we have today, because I hope we can get you back on the phone. I know you came up here from Peoria. It's not easy drive to make. But I'd love to have you back on to talk more about both aspects of this. But your daughter was bullied. And your daughter was somebody that had that trigger in her brain for addiction that you now know about alcoholism and drug addiction. It's a disease.
Correct.
When you go out and you talk to kids or you talk to schools, is it the Holt Center?
Yes, Holt Center for Healthy Living.
All right. So what's the program?
The program is called Youth Mental Health Matters. And the timing couldn't have been, I hate to use the word better, but...
Understand.
You know, with Chelsea's story, we actually came together at the time that they were wanting to... They wanted to take on this new program
sure.
for mental health, because most of their programs involve the physical teachings for students. So for us to come together at that point in time was pretty amazing. I think we both would agree. And they were applying for a grant to take on a new program. It was a pilot program. So Chelsea's story became a part of that. It's a three-day program that also involves the Center for Prevention of Abuse. And I think it's an outstanding program. I think we have a contract with some of the schools in the Peoria area, as well as other schools that invite us there, because they think there's a need for the program. I think it's proven. We know students have, the outcome of these students has
sure.
been, it's just been fantastic, because they are so thankful that we are in the schools talking about this. And then with Chelsea's story being a part of it, you know, for these kids, there's nothing more powerful than a real life story. And to have me there talking to the kids, it never gets old to me, because every student that we talk to is, you know, that's a new life. And I've had kids reach out and thank me, and we've, you know, even say that you've saved me, because they were dealing with so many things, possibly on the brink of suicide. And this program also involves a counselor as a safety net. So after the program, we don't just let the kids go. There's
follow up
with the counselors, and
just in Peoria, or around the state, or wherever.
Just Peoria now. I don't think Holt could go out of the state. I can go anywhere on my own to tell Chelsea's story. I prefer to be with the program.
But there is a way for people to contact the Holt program,
oh, yeah.
I'm sure, so they could say, "I want to replicate this in my school. What do we do?"
I would say contact the Holt Center, and
we'll get some contact information for that. We'll
sure.
put it up on social and everything
sure.
else.
But we, you know, we'd like to expand even in other areas outside of Peoria. It's a time issue, of course, and it takes time. I mean, when I speak, I'm there all day in seven, you know, 6 to 7 to 8 classes.
And the amazing thing is, you don't even know the long term effects you have and how you've changed a kid's life going down the road.
I know, but I have received emails from these kids after the fact,
and
I can't say nothing warms my heart more.
Of course.
You're getting such great feedback, and you're such a great speaker as well. Do you foresee maybe some of the laws changing now because of Chelsea's inability to be on that transplant list, but perhaps changing the how stringent they are?
I do. I will say, one, you know, I was continually researching on my advocacy for the mental health was one part of it. The other part, of course, was trying to make changes with this ridding the 6-month rule. So I was continually researching, and I could never find a story like Chelsea's. One day I came across a story. I reached out to the reporter who wrote it, of a woman who had lost her husband. I didn't get, you know, a lot of information back from him, but I never gave up, and I kept Googling her to see, you know, I just had a strong feeling that maybe she would be the one to connect with. And lo and behold, just about 6 months ago, she had her own organization formed, and it's called the Selkirk Liver Society.
Wow.
And for us to come together, and it's just amazing. And the lives, I mean, the changes that she's making, she actually has top surgeons involved that do believe addiction is a disease, and do not agree with dismissing these patients.
Out of hand, right? Just because, well, you got yourself into this, now
right.
go home and fix it.
But the way we look at it is, it's, you know, it's no different to us than another life-threatening illness. When I look back at what Chelsea was dealing with, I feel like she was walking around with a cancer that no one wanted to help her treat and just take care of it on your own. And knowing what she was living with, and especially being so young, and you know, as you talked about, the drinking early changes the brain.
We
know that.
Fetal alcohol syndrome is a real thing, and the bottom line is this: for when an organ is given to somebody, there's somebody else that doesn't get one, and you love somebody and you see them go through what you saw your daughter go through. I can't imagine how brutal that was. We need a fair and level playing field, but first and foremost, we need more viable organs and a better amount of organs that are out there. So please consider organ donation. All the myths, all the nonsense that's out there are just that. If you go to Jesse White's website,
it's so easy. And then when you get your driver's license now,
you can do it right
there. It's automatically on there.
And it's a big deal, and that should be
Absolutely.
Part of Chelsea's story as well. I want to have you come back. We don't have time to do it justice today, but I hope you feel good about talking about it, because I think you can change lives just by doing this.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity today.
You're a good mom.
Thank you.
Yeah. Nice to have you here.
This is backwards from where something like this would usually be done. You would start with lower level diplomats. You would negotiate. You would say, what are the terms before we send a president in? And they have just done this completely backwards. I think the real risk here is if there is no sort of diplomatic agreement, if they don't come to any sort of terms, you have the two presidents. So where do they go from there?
Michael Osland joins us, friend of the show and an expert on the Asian Peninsula. We'll tell you about his book in just a second. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
What did you think when you heard that President Trump was going to meet with Kim Jong-un? Maybe you're watching an SNL rerun?
Well, look, you know, he's gone from being the negotiator to the gambler because this is really a massive, it's a seismic earthquake in terms of American policy in the region, American relations with North Korea, and one that is actually really quite rushed. I mean, they want to meet within a few months. There has never been a meeting between the U.S. president and the North Korean leader, and that would be, you know, that would be big news regardless of the fact that you have a nuclear-armed North Korea that can threaten us and the rest of the world. So this is, nobody should underestimate just how massive a shift this is in U.S. policy.
As a resident scholar and someone that sits around talking about this all the time, the author of The End of the Asian Century and many of the things you've written, this speeds up your process as well. So let's take this to the end game here. They're in the room together with the translators. They don't come to a deal. Where do you go from there?
Well, first of all, the White House has been clear to say that this is not a negotiations, and we should be careful that it doesn't become one. This is supposed to be a sit-down meeting. Now, Steve, I think there's problems with doing that alone, but this should not be where they come in like a Reykjavik situation between Reagan and Gorbachev back in 1985, where suddenly there's a grand bargain on the table, because no one, most of all us, will have had time to really work through that. So they shouldn't be coming to any deal at all. Now, that raises the question, why meet him? And, you know, they'll give answers that...
That's the thing, the front work is supposed to be, right? The lead negotiators, the ambassadors, the other people on the team, they do all the legwork, and then the two leaders come in and high-five each other and have a deal. Isn't that the way this is supposed to work?
That's exactly right. So this should be months, if not years, of negotiation at all of these different levels we have in Washington, you know, and the Secretary of State, for example, or the Secretary of Defense, they also get involved right at the end. This should be the Assistant Secretaries and the Deputy Assistant Secretaries and so on and so forth. So the real danger is that Trump goes into this meeting. The North Koreans are probably going to bring some amazing package that just sounds too good to be true, and the temptation will be to grab it, to say, look, we've come up with this grand bargain, we have solved the Korean Peninsula, we've saved the world from the threat of North Korean nukes, and the price, of course, is withdrawing U.S. troops from the Korean Peninsula and maybe doing some other things, and we haven't really prepared ourselves, our allies, for what this means. We haven't really talked deeply with the Chinese about their interpretations, because they're going to try and take advantage. And so one of two things will happen, Steve. Either we're going to get this deal, which again, I would be very nervous about taking the first time they meet, or we're not going to get a deal. And if we don't get a deal, then, of course, the North Koreans will say, well, see, we offered peace, we offered denuclearization, and the Americans didn't take it, so we're going to double down on this program.
So, Michael, if these talks set the stage for negotiations, at this point, should then it be handed down to the Nikki Haleys, the Rex Tillersons? Because does Trump lessen the position of the presidency by engaging one-on-one in these talks?
Yeah, so that's really the danger, right? So the process is, it would even be below Nikki Haley and Rex Tillerson. It goes down to their subordinates and the subordinates in the State Department and Defense Department and National Security Council. This will not even be getting to the desks of those people. I mean, they'll be informed, but it's not getting to the desks until later. But you're right. So the question is, what does Kim Jong-un want? Well, just by meeting Kim Jong-un, Trump essentially legitimizes him. You know, and that's something no U.S. president has been willing to do, and that's exactly what he wants. The North Koreans will be parading these scenes in all of their social media. They'll be parading it, of course, throughout the country. It's very hard, once the president has met Kim Jong-un, to go back to calling him, you know, a rogue danger or whatever
a little rocket man
you use about him. Yeah, you know, I mean, you can, but then people say, well, then why'd you meet him in the first place, right? So the danger is we'll unexpectedly on our end, maneuver into normalization and recognition of North Korea. And maybe that's something we want to do at the end or need to do at the end. But the summit is something that, again, no U.S. president, not even Bill Clinton, who made the most extensive agreement with the North Koreans back in 1994, did, though he wanted to. But they slow walked it. You know, you had Madeleine Albright, the Secretary of State back then, go over first. So this really is truly seismic, and it's happening really quickly.
The end game here appears to be a win for North Korea in either direction, because if they say, look, we'll freeze it at this amount that we have now, they've already got nukes that we believe could hit the U.S., so they've already achieved what Saddam Hussein did for years. Doesn't matter if IAEA investigators come in or they don't, because they could just say, okay, we won't do any more. They're broke. They need money. They need the sanctions to go away. Outside of the sanctions, what other bargaining chip do we have?
Well, for us, it's not much. I mean, that's the main thing. Now, from one hand, you can say, look, the Trump approach and the strategy has actually been more successful than what we've done in the past. It's obviously brought them to the table. Sure. In this way where they are talking about, well, we will denuclearize. But of course, the quid pro quo is you get rid of the sanctions, which strengthens that regime. And unless you've got not only absolute trust in them, but you've got inspectors on the ground who have unfettered access, we'll never know if behind our backs in one of these mountain caves somewhere, they're continuing with this program. And then there's other things on the table. You know, we just have recently been receiving reports that they are developing further nerve gas agents in third countries. So Syria, for example, and others. So these are not guys who are suddenly going to turn into being good actors, right? And we always, you know, are so focused on just one thing, and they always see the much larger picture. So now you can have a North Korea that, okay, maybe it does freeze its nuclear program, though I would be very, you know, doubtful that they'll suddenly say, yeah, we'll give up the nukes. But let's just say they decide to freeze the program. Well, now they're going on and they're developing sarin and VX and all sure. of these other things that make them just as much of a threat to Seoul or Tokyo or ultimately the United States. If you've got the ICBM, you know, a VX missile, you know, a VX warhead on a missile or a sarin warhead or any one of these can be almost, it's not going to be as devastating as a nuke, but it would be a weapon of mass destruction. So, you know, we've got to make sure that we're ready to cover all the different parts of the waterfront in terms of their weapons program and not rush and say, oh, yeah, you know, we'll drop the sanctions and we'll even withdraw troops from the peninsula. You just freeze your weapons. I mean, there's going to be a lot of voices that will be warning against doing that, but the temptation will be that Reykjavik temptation, that temptation to say, my God, we can solve this and we can solve it right now. And for Trump or any U.S. president, that is a mighty, you know, tempting morsel to have to turn down.
What do you think China and Russia are thinking this morning?
So that's a great question on China. Look, China wants one thing above all, which is to reduce, if not eliminate, U.S. influence in the region. Now, if the North Koreans can help achieve that by getting the U.S. to agree to withdraw troops from the Korean Peninsula and break the alliance with South Korea, then that is a huge win for the Chinese. They'll take advantage of it. They will be by far the most dominant figure on the peninsula in both the north and the south. They will continue to push, probably even try to push something like a reunification where they would guarantee Korean security, which means the U.S. will increasingly be seen as irrelevant in the region. It also will cause great fears on the part of our other partners, Japan, Australia, Taiwan, the Philippines. Everyone will be saying, well, you know, if the U.S. is starting to bug out, you know, we better start thinking about how we secure our own interests and what type of deal we may need to make with the Chinese. So for the Chinese, pardon me, for the Chinese, this is a great deal. Now, the question is, how much can they actually control Kim Jong-un? And we know they don't like him. We know that they actually would prefer a non-nuclear North Korea, because that, of course, is a North Korea that's more dependent on China. But the Chinese will take the long view, and they'll be willing to go step by step, you know, get the Americans out or reduce American influence, lock the Americans into some sort of agreement. And then you, Beijing, can really put the pressure on Kim Jong-un so that you become the predominant power in the region.
We were talking about nukes. Now we're talking about talking. That's the upside. The rest of it's just pretty damn scary.
Yeah. Look, it's always better to talk than not to talk. There's no question. I think, though, that when you jump all of these other levels,
yeah,
where we should be having increasingly deep, engaged, frank talks, you know, with the assistant secretaries and the deputy assistants, and then the undersecretaries. You know, that's why we got all these levels there. They actually, believe it or not, they are there for a reason in Washington, which is you've got to very carefully track and assess what you're doing at all of these stages. When you leapfrog all of that, and you suddenly get to, well, the two leaders are going to be meeting, you know, the temptation is to say, well, this is great. You know, these are the two guys who can make the decision on war and peace.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's true. But if we're not ready for that set of talks, if we haven't anticipated everything, if, you know, they walk into the room, they hate each other, and they start yelling at each other because they can't agree, we're going to be in a worse situation than we were beforehand.
It's headache causing, and that's the least of our problems. The End of the Asian Century, Michael Osland's tremendous book, and also all the great work he does when he's not nice enough to come on here. Listen, we appreciate it as always, Michael. You know that, and they can follow Michael on social media, and we hope you will. Thank you.
Anytime, Steve. Thanks.
See ya. I always feel better when I talk to Michael.
Yeah.
At the same time, I always feel worse.
I know. But he answers every question so well, and you can understand it, too.
Dean's coming up. Dean Richards. We'll yuck that up in a little bit. News next, 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah,
live at Channel 9. Good morning, Dave.
Oh, he's back.
Yes, I am, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Steve is back.
How'd the show go when your dad did it for me?
It was okay.
You didn't crash and burn the place, did you?
Not any more than I usually do on Sunday morning.
Dean, it was great. Yeah. Don't sell yourself short.
Well, maybe the problem was us.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what he's kind of hinting at.
I felt bad because the guy that normally does the news on Sunday, I think you know who I'm talking about, Dean.
D. Schwann?
Yeah. Stormed the newsroom. He thought it was Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes he'll just wander out.
He just hears my voice on the radio, and like Pavlovian, he comes to the station.
And then there was a rumble. Grzanich threw an uppercut, knocked him out. You know, but he had it coming.
Gets a little ugly behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Honestly, I feel like I'm not doing very much when I fill in for you, because Dave and Andrea like read all the commercials. They do all the work.
They do all the heavy lifting. And as long as you listen to Sandberg, you won't have any trouble.
That, right. I learned that a long time ago, when I fill in for your show. All I got to do is wait for somebody to point at me.
And did you, at any time, did Joe Romano blink out, "Help me, I'm a hostage"?
I didn't know what that was. He was blinking his eyes funny. Yeah, I thought he was just,
Dean,
like,
help me, help me. Sopranos news. That's right. Sopranos news coming up.
Bing.
Star Wars news coming up. Obama news coming up. Tommy Lee couldn't be a bigger creep. And Dean will review some movies for the weekend. Hey, you fly all the time.
Yes, I do.
All right, I need an explanation on something. I'm coming back from, 4 days of playing golf in Orlando. I land at O'Hare. You're familiar with O'Hare, large airport?
Yes.
And I go to pick up my my bags, my golf clubs, and the other bag that doesn't mean as much. And that's the one with the clothes and the other things in it.
Who needs that?
So I go to pick up my bags, and five flights are coming into one carousel.
Correct.
All the other carousels are just sitting there. They're not running. We got five flights coming into one carousel.
Coming into one, and if I'm going to guess that there were probably still bags from the five previous flights on that same carousel as well.
So here's my question. It took 52 minutes to get my two bags after I arrived at baggage claim. Why wouldn't you just have the other baggage carousels running to have maybe a flight or two on those? Or am I crazy? Wouldn't that speed things up?
If they were lined up, you know, and bags were coming out, you know, one flight after another. But I'm guessing that didn't happen either. I'll bet that, you know, that one flight came out and then there was a long delay and another.
So what, it's like a potpourri? They just throw them on? I don't understand how it works.
I would love to go back there sometime.
There's got to be somebody listening that works at baggage, not just for United, for somebody who could explain this. Because maybe I'm wrong, but I don't understand how five flights and one luggage carousel is the fastest way to get bags back to their people. I don't understand that.
Even if it's one flight and one carousel, how it takes so long, because other airports, I know O'Hare is big, but it just takes a ridiculous amount of time.
I would agree with
bags
that.
Bags to come out.
Well, Orlando's a huge airport.
Other airports, other equally large airports, London Heathrow is easily as large.
LAX.
LAX is just as large. The bags come out much.
So what's going on, bag people?
What are you doing to our bags?
What are we doing, bag people? Explain that to us.
Yeah. And stop touching my stuff.
Well, that's the thing. Here's the thing. I think that if you don't get your bags within a certain amount of time, how long do you want it to be?
Well,
let's say 30 minutes. That's a long time.
That is a long time. I was going to say 10.
All right, so let's say 30. But 30, here's the deal I'm going to make. All right. 30 minutes. If you don't get your bags within 30 minutes, you take the closest bag next to you. It doesn't even matter if it's yours. You just take it and you
just
run.
Take a bag.
Yeah. All right, fine. Steve's on the phone. He used to be a ramp rat. Good morning, Steve.
Hi.
What do I not understand about this?
Well, what time did your flight come in?
3 o'clock, I guess, something like that.
Oh, 3 o'clock in the afternoon?
Yep.
Okay, that's during one of the main rushes.
Okay.
Now, what you don't understand is, you know, that carousel that wanders out of the wall and then goes back into the wall?
Yeah, yeah.
There's a long, that thing wanders behind the wall also.
Okay.
And it's just straight. So when we would drop off what they refer to as city bags, a bag that said O'Hare, that bag had to have come off of the aircraft and been separated from what is referred to as hot bags, which are trying to make it to connecting flights, or international bags, or other airline bags. All right, so city bags, hey, we're not in any big hurry. Let's say you were sitting up towards the front of the plane, so you're in a hurry. You get off of the plane right away quick. Meanwhile, they're trying to unload the rest of the plane while the available baggage service guys on the ground are trying to get the bags out of the pit.
So the hot bags, the international bags, those are higher priority bags than I've got to get my bags. I get that, but then why wouldn't you have other people at the other carousels to speed the process along, or wouldn't that make it any faster?
Wouldn't make it any faster.
How come?
Because there's a limited number of ramp personnel.
Well, so it's a personnel
thing. There's a limited number of tractors and baggage carts and so on and so forth.
So shouldn't the airline pop for more people to process the bags faster?
You're talking about United Airlines. They're trying to save every buck they can.
There you go.
Isn't part of that process automated also, the UPC codes that we see on the tags? Isn't that scanned someplace and then it's automatically diverted someplace else? So it's not like a guy sitting there going, oh, this is a connecting bag, so put it over there. And this is a Chicago bag, put it over there. These tags are scanned, and the bags are just funneled to the correct conveyor belt, if I understand it correctly.
Well, underneath in the labyrinths at O'Hare, they have what they'll refer to as, surprisingly enough, a baggage room.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's where Bruce Willis has the gunfights.
Yeah.
Yes, okay.
Yes.
Now, what you don't see is after you drop your bag off, whether it is at the sky cap out in front, which I always recommend everybody should do.
Yeah, I do.
Or the ticket.
And I'm a good tipper, too, by the way.
Why do you recommend that?
You don't have to wait.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's faster. But by the way, tip them.
Yes, I always recommend, because my dear sainted aunt, bless her soul, always said, $5 a bag, it's well worth it.
Yeah, because $5 a bag pays for your bag getting there. Don't tip them or give them a dollar. Your bag's going to Guam.
That's right. Let's not tag it properly. Anyway, that conveyor belt.
Good luck at work today.
By the way, Steve is no longer with the company.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yes, I haven't been there for ages. But anyway, all of those ramps that you see behind the ticket counter and by the sky cap, they all go down into the labyrinths below. They get fed on other ramps.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are special gates. They're looking for those tags.
You know what, Steve? And here's the deal. Dean and I, and hold on for me. Give Steve something for that explanation. But Steve has got to set this up first. Dean and I have to get a tour of backstage at O'Hare.
Oh, yeah. I would love
to. I want to see how it works. But I'm still not convinced my answer is not correct. Pop for more people. More people work in the empty carousels. People get their bags and they go home sooner.
Yeah, well, that's not going to happen.
When you guys take your tour, can I hold the glow sticks and guide the plane in? Because that's something I've always wanted to do.
Sure.
That means
Dave's got to be the pilot.
I know.
This is what I would like to do. Steve and I, we would like a tour, but if it's possible for us to just get tagged when we go to the airport.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Get on the conveyor belt as though we were suitcases.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
To see how this whole thing works.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that there was a kid in Orlando that called me an old bag at one point this week.
I was going to say, while he was talking, I know you have quite a bit of baggage, but
that's just
emotional.
That's a great visual. Can we wrap you in the cellophane like some people wrap around their luggage?
We all have dreams.
I'd love that with a big daisy-like tag on my ear.
All right, show business coming up with Dean.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Mike! I forgot where the mic is. I've been out of town. Dean's back, and let's go right to the lightning round.
There was no yelling when I was filling.
Mike! Since we're out of time. Sopranos prequel.
Yeah, it's going to be set in the 1960s. It's going to be a feature film, not a television show. And it is going to be set in the 1960s when race wars were going on between the Italians in Newark and the African Americans in Newark at the time. Many of the original cast members will be part of all of this, and that's all we know right now. They have not announced a date yet.
Well, how can they be a part of it when they were older in the original?
I have no idea how.
Flash forwards?
How they're going to do this? Yes, all those things.
Star Wars live action,
animated
series.
Claymation, all those things. Are going to be part of it all.
Now they quite like a mob fight with claymation.
Yeah, the Star Wars. Jon Favreau, who directed Iron Man and Jungle Book, and I think is a fantastic director, has signed on to write and executive produce a live action Star Wars series that's going to be part of this new Disney streaming platform. It's going to be just Disney stuff like Netflix or Hulu.
But a series that's going to be super expensive.
This is going to be a series to develop new characters for future Star Wars.
Cost $1 billion.
Turns out that Disney has that kind of money.
Okay.
Just for what they made in Black Panther.
Yeah, and what they made in Tea Times this weekend, this week for me.
No. Is that where you were?
Yeah, I was in Orlando.
When you play golf there, do you shoot them through Mickey's nose?
No, it's weird. Minnie drives the beer cart. Really? Oh, who needs a cold beverage?
Really?
The Obamas doing Netflix?
Yeah, they just announced that Barack and Michelle Obama are in talks with Netflix to develop a series of talk shows. It looks like it's going to be shows definitely on Netflix. Some will be talk shows, some apparently will be other content. But the Obamas are said to be interested in producing inspirational stories that can be seen on a global platform, is the exact quote.
Can we get President Trump a Netflix show and let somebody else handle North Korea?
That would be interesting. That would be an interesting combination.
I bet he'd be willing to negotiate. Tommy Lee couldn't be a bigger creep.
This whole thing is
ugly.
Pretty weird. So the other day, Tommy Lee's 21-year-old son, Brandon, goes over to Tommy Lee's house and beats the crap out of him, according to what Tommy Lee said.
And according to Brandon, it's an intervention attempt gone wrong.
Yes. He says that alcohol was involved on the part of the elder Lee here, but what TMZ now is reporting is that Tommy Lee's filed a police report against his son, wants him charged with the crime, has gotten a restraining order against him to keep him away from him. He says he'll drop all that stuff if his son just apologizes for all that has happened. I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Pam Anderson, the mother of Brandon, has come out against Tommy Lee.
Yeah, there's just a whole lot of ugly going on. They're tweeting against each other. I mean, it's just an ugly public family feud without Richard Dawson kissing anyone.
You can see all of Dean's reviews on Channel 9, of course, and online. But I want to ask you about two movies quickly here. Gringo.
Gringo is, it's okay. It's kind of a comedy, action, thriller. David Oyelowo from Selma, Charlize Theron. He's a middle management guy who gets caught up in the web of bad doings between his pharmaceutical company that he works for and a Mexican drug cartel. He's this mild-mannered, meek guy that has no idea what's going on around him, but all kinds of bad things are going on around him. It's kind of funny. There are like way too many subplots in this movie that weigh the whole thing down. But Charlize Theron brings some laughs, so I gave it a Dean's List C.
And Oprah's A Wrinkle in Time.
Disappointed in Wrinkle in Time. It's a whole lot of style, whole lot of substance. It's gorgeous to look at. It's a beautiful movie, but here is another one where, this is a movie that's intended for the whole family and for kids, and really is not that fun at all. The story is filled with holes in the plot, things that don't make sense, as a little girl goes in search all over the universe for her missing father with the help of these three celestial beings, Oprah, Reese Witherspoon, Mindy Kaling. This movie looks like it wants to be Wizard of Oz and have that kind of fantasy and fun. And instead, it's like going to a Deepak Chopra weekend retreat. It's like nothing but new age slogans. And, it's weighed down with all that. I felt like I was being preached to the whole time. So disappointed in that. Beautiful to look at. C+ on that one.
And you're on Sunday?
I am. We're going to be live at the American Lung Association climb over at Presidential Towers. So, Steve, we'll be looking forward to seeing you out there.
I'll be bringing my check.
Before you take the four stairwells. Wells.
Elevator.
Four of the wells. I'll be wailing in the stairwell.
Elevator.
Help me!
I will stop by O'Hare and pick up your luggage.
Help me, Steve. You've only done three steps.
Right.
Help me! Thanks, buddy.
Bye.
Headlines next, 720 WGN. Most famous Who song, you think? Probably. Coach Q is sponsored by Hooters, the original wing joint. And Coach Q loves the Who. I know it's not your favorite Who song. Is that the most famous Who song, you think?
It's probably in the top 5 or 10, maybe.
Right. What's the most famous Who song?
Good question. Maybe Baba O'Reilly, maybe, I don't know what the favorite one really is.
You ever pay for tickets to a Who concert?
Yes, I have.
Come on, really? I would have thought from your time as a player through any time you want to see them, somebody be falling all over themselves trying to hand you free tickets.
Yeah, and I haven't seen Who in a while.
All right, well, Pete Townsend's here, but he doesn't want to talk to you about hockey. I told him he can call you off the air. He's not really here, Q. I'm just making it up. Shouldn't be throwing stuff out like that. Listen, the grind continues. What do you learn this time of year? I know you want to look at the younger guys, but what are you learning from these games?
Well, last night we didn't learn much. It was a tough game last night. You want to see some consistency to your game. You want to see the guy's speed. You want to see how well they handle a puck. You want to see them move together. So it's all the zones last night were a little chopped up, but I think it was again. Whether it was a pace to our game or was there the lack of handling the puck or making completed passes or moving together, that was disjointed, and that was a tough night in that area.
What about the play of Berube last night? Because it seems like he gave you a chance again in this game.
Yes, he did. Made a couple big saves, kept us in the game. That second period there, we were in there in the majority of the period there, and it was they kept coming at us. I mean, we never had the puck walk longer and did much when we did have it. So we're in our end, and we're defending, and the fact there was a one-goal game to the end was flattering, and we had a chance to tie it up right at the end. And but certainly it's not it's not conducive to trying to win hockey games playing like that.
Against Colorado the other night, last night you get Carolina. They're in a tight race to try to make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. When you're playing teams that are in these tight playoff races, how much of a challenge is it to try to match their intensity when they've got so much on the line?
Well, everybody, has got is in the middle of a race here. Somebody's got incentive for the 2 points, and it's almost jockeying to get in the playoff spot, and we're in a different spot. But it's I still think you're pros, and you got to be competitive, and playing the right way is something we talk about a lot. And having fun out there when you do things right and you do things hard, I think you enjoy enjoy it.
The fans have sent in several questions today. They're really more off-ice general hockey questions, but I thought they were interesting. I'm going to hit you with a few of those in a second. But when you play a team like Boston, which is, they've had a very strong year, you can come in, you can kind of rough them up a little bit. And, it's not a spoiler role, obviously, because it's not over yet. But do you game plan these type of games different? I mean, it's a weird position because you haven't been in this position since you've been coaching the Hawks, really.
Well, you always prepare to try to win and do all the things you can to put yourself in that flavor. And we feel that Boston, as good as anybody at any point of the year, the way they're playing now is dangerous in a lot of ways. They play hard. They got a physical team. They're big, and they do a lot of things that we got to be aware of tomorrow. So it's two big games in a row for them, and we want to make sure that we're playing the right way and have fun doing it.
I was in Orlando for a few days, and I was having dinner with a big shot agent type, and he's a really good tennis player. He's 63, maybe 64, played at Pepperdine, D1 school. And I was asking about ratings for tennis, and he's still, at that age, a 5.5 or a 6. Did you ever rate yourself? I know you're a tennis guy, Joel. Did you ever rate yourself as a tennis player? You ever have a number assigned to your game?
No number assigned. I'm an ordinary player.
So that'd be an O?
That guy at 5'5 is a good player.
Yeah, I don't understand the translation. Like a scratch handicap is a 0. You're a 10 or under. It's a really good golfer. So what is a 5? Is a 5?
I'd be like a 10 to a 10 to a 15 or a 10. 10 to 15.
Okay, so 5's a good player. All right, so here's a couple of these fan questions that came in. What's one hockey rule that you really, really, really dislike?
Say that again.
A hockey rule, a rule that you really don't like.
A rule that I dislike. Well, you gotta live with them all. So it's one of those things that can change. From game to game, but I think the way the game is translated over the last little while with the speed of the game, letting the guys have some freedom to move and skate, and I think that's been healthy for the game. And as far as I think I don't want to get into it's not an easy thing when we're talking about the goalie interference, or we're talking about goalie or coaches challenges. I think the evolution is they're handling it well, and we're going along with it, and it's been fine. I think everybody's getting better as we're going along as well.
Can I tell you one I don't like? We went from icing to virtual icing. I would like to see a judgment call based on delay of game. You're in your own end. The puck goes off your stick. You're not trying to knock it out of play. I don't think that should be a 2-minute penalty.
Yeah, well, that's a that's dangerous when you're down one man already, and all of a sudden it's a 2-man disadvantage. It's one of those plays that whether it's intent or non-intent, you know, I think guys are would be very adaptive at being having the ability to get it out of the building without, you know, getting a stoppage of play. Sometimes when you're tired, when you can make it look like you're, you know, instead of icing it.
Related question to that from a different listener. Do you ever run into officials downstairs after a poorly called game, and how awkward is that? That's a funny question.
I've had run-ins in the past with some officials, and I think that's all part of the game. But it's a, you know, I think over the years I've mellowed out times a different number and, you know, leave it there.
On the ice, who calls the line changes, coaches or players?
Well, we the players sometimes can extend shifts, and sometimes, but you like them to go 30, 40 seconds, and we on the bench will call who's up, and you know, and everybody has a relative 30, 40 second shifts, change at the right time. Best if you change together.
Do players really? This is another question. Do players really listen during the timeouts?
They do listen. I mean, we're not always given orders, you know, between timeouts, and you know. But I think sometimes they're talking about what's off a face-off, what they're looking to do, and sometimes you're making awareness to what needs to be done on both sides of a face-off. But on timeouts, you know, depending on what the flavor is coming out of the timeout, whether it's a power play or penalty kill situation, it changes D-zone or offensive zone. There's a lot of different things off a timeout.
I don't remember the rule when you were a player, but did you listen during timeouts?
There's no timeouts.
I didn't think there was. Yeah, when did that rule start?
Good question.
Wasn't that 90s? I want to say it was the 90s. I'm not sure. And Andrea has a question. She gets frustrated by some goalie play. What's your question for
Coach? I just don't understand how come and this is such a basic elementary question, why does the goalie have to ever leave the goal? So, you know, when the puck goes behind the goal, it just makes me so nervous.
The stress that Andrea is put under by the goalie playing the puck.
I want to say, get back, get back. And I know he'll get back in time, but I just want to say, don't move.
Not always. Not always.
You know, some goalies are very good at handling the puck, and they got the trapezoid now, so you can't go in that area. So right. You got a limited area where you can go out. And some goalies are different levels in how well they handle the puck. But it's a great art, and it's a great skill, and it really enhances your defensive zone exits as well.
Best goalie ever to handle the puck? Who'd you like?
I would say Marty Brodeur might be one.
Yep. Isn't he the reason they invented the trapezoid rule? I think he is.
Could have been there. Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for the education, Coach. I appreciate it. And we'll see you out there Sunday for an early one with the Bruins.
All righty.
All right. All the best, man.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. You too.
That's Coach Q, sponsored by Hooters, the original wing joint.
NHL players, I don't know if you saw this while you were away, but the NHL Players Association released a survey of more than 500 NHL players. They listed Coach Q as the coach for whom they would most like to play.
Oh.
Not a surprise, really, is it?
Cool.
I can see
Not
that
really.
Because he's intense.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to win, and he's a proven winner. His second most wins ever.
Right.
And
right.
The only other guy with more wins isn't in the same office.
Right, correct.
Right, Scotty Bowman.
Yep.
Yeah.
So.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
When I walk up with you, I watch the whole room change.
Live on 720 WGN from the Showcase Studio. Steve Cochran, Andrea, Dave, Mr. Grzanich, Jen DeSalvo in for Mary. Joe getting it done, and Sandberg yelling at all of us. It's another day of work. One of the guests recently we got the most, one of the most amounts of feedback on is here to do a little follow-up in a second, but I also want to do a little follow-up on last night, because we had Q on a few minutes ago, and a lot of people were, why was I stuck on the Eisenhower for 2 hours trying to get home last night? There was another shooting on the Ike last night.
Yeah, there was another shooting on the Eisenhower.
And we got a lot of text about it this morning, too. When is something going to be done? When is something going to be done? The best of our knowledge is these are gang shootings
right.
That spill out from the neighborhood into like a road rage car thing.
That's the best way to put it.
And absolutely. Shots get fired.
Absolutely. There was one on the Ryan, I believe it was yesterday morning as well, day before yesterday, Steve. But yeah, that's exactly what's happening, and state police are confirming that too. These incidents happen where, be it either on the Eisenhower or the Stevenson or the Dan Ryan, specifically this morning the Eisenhower, these arguments escalate. They start someone gets in their car. It's awful that it happens, but they follow
the weird part is I don't remember the highway stuff the way it's happened in the last year, mm-hmm. right?
I think they figured out that they can get the people who are running from whoever they're running from figured out they can get away. They can get on an empty expressway and right. floor it. I think that's what they figured out.
Right. Not realizing that someone's going to give chase and then start shooting. And
right. You know, I'm on the Ike every day.
Yeah.
And, you know, thousands and thousands of people are on the Ike, the Ryan, the Kennedy, whatever. Is it weird that you take some solace in the fact, well, they're not shooting at me? Because it still could happen, right? Somebody shoots. These are not skilled marksmen, as we found out too many times.
Oh, my gosh, way too many times. And that's the biggest fear, though, Steve. It's that you're not the intended target, and there's these stray bullets that are just going to be fired.
Let's talk about some good news here. The Giannis are back. Good morning to Nancy and Gigi. Nancy, of course, no energy at all.
Nothing, zero. I do want to comment on your tan.
Thank you very much.
I noticed you guys. Nice. Come on now.
Nice.
Come on.
At least I could count on somebody. And the star, the rock star of the show, Gigi's here. Gigi's Playhouse is an unbelievable success story. Yes. Because I say that just because of the amount of success you've had so fast. So let's start there. Introduce Gigi.
This is Gigi. So Gigi is my 15-year-old daughter. She's my youngest of four kids. She happens to have Down syndrome, and she's rocking that extra chromosome.
And Gigi, every kid has something. And you just maximize your life with your something, and that's what you're doing. And you're paying it forward with the Playhouse by doing what?
Yeah, having a gala.
Yes, well, that's this week. But before you get to the plug, explain the concept of the Playhouse.
Yes, well, Gigi's Playhouse is our Down Syndrome Achievement Centers. So we do free therapeutic and educational programming for individuals with Down Syndrome from a prenatal diagnosis all the way through career skills. So we make a lifetime commitment to our families, and we never stop. I mean, kids with Down Syndrome are born with low muscle tone.
Yep.
So things that come naturally to all of us, they have to teach their body to do. You know, we're born, you know, typical babies born checking out the world. Our babies are born teaching their bodies how to suck, swallow, and breathe. And then from that point on, teaching themselves to do everything that comes naturally to all of us.
Sure.
And this being able to have, like, our football players that are here. I don't know if you're going to introduce
Brent. Well, I thought I'd introduce him at some point. He's too good-looking to put him on right away. It takes attention away from me. You know how I am.
Yes. Well, having these guys in the house and representing us and with these strong muscles and everything else that they have is just something more. We can't even give our appreciation enough.
All right, let's plug the event, too. And Gigi, are you excited about the party?
Yes.
It is Saturday night?
Saturday night.
Yes.
Saturday night.
Woo-hoo! Gigi, what's the best thing about the party? What are you looking forward to most?
Dancing.
Dancing.
Oh, yeah.
Are you insisting on a particular song being played? You got a favorite song, favorite artist? I see you as kind of a Bruno Mars girl.
Yes. Yep. And Justin Bieber.
Justin Bieber.
You know.
Yeah, I get confused for him a lot.
Yeah.
Brent Novoselsky is here. Brent played a year with the Bears and five or six of the Vikings, and he's still pretty, as Ali used to say. How you doing, man? It's been forever.
I'm doing well. It's actually six. It was 6 full years.
Was it 6?
It was 6 with the Vikings, yeah.
I shouldn't take a year off that. Come on, what am I talking about?
No, come on. Yeah, I earned that 7 years.
That's exactly right. And it's great that you're involved, but how did you guys connect with all this?
We connected, well, Nancy has just been phenomenal, and Gigi's awesome, and our executive director, Tom Serpento, connected with them last year, and then we were able to go to the benefit last year and see at the gala and really see it firsthand. And, you know, once they say, well, once you've seen these kids.
Yeah,
and
once you get the mission, right? You get
it. You're in. You're hooked.
And you're with who now? GCG?
With GCG Financial, yes.
So what do? You manage money?
Insurance and investments, yeah. Try to.
You want to talk to us about our comprehensive
You got to have money to manage it?
Boy.
So, you know, the old blood from a stone type of thing.
Oh, that's tough.
You know, when you try to get blood
just
from a stone.
Just got back from vacation.
Yeah,
check with me in a month.
And Vegas. Don't forget that.
Yeah, I left some in Vegas. Oh. We could go visit my money.
Yeah.
Oh, we're actually going to Vegas on Sunday, the NFL
conference.
Say
hello to my money.
I will. Yeah. I will. Hopefully you'll have it. You there. It's very nice. I'll get it for you.
So having these guys around is great because not only do they bring attention to the cause, but they see what's going on. They pay it forward, as Brent just said. The buzz, the network then gets larger, right?
Absolutely. And they've got a network all across the country of their players. And that's what we really love about this. That's what Gigi's about. We have 36 locations across the country and in Mexico. I know. And there's 14 more coming in the next year. 14.
That's tremendous.
And 200 more in some phase of the Gigi's Playhouse model.
Gigi, you should feel really good about that. You're changing the world.
She does.
You should feel very good about that.
And she speaks at every opening. Our next one, right after gala, with spring break, and then right after spring break, we go right into our San Diego location. It's going to be opening, and then Tampa, then Houston, and
I love Tampa.
You love Tampa?
Yeah. That's right.
Well, it's warmer than it is here, for one thing, right?
Yeah. She is so done with winter this year.
I understand.
No kidding.
No,
so
I completely understand.
I hate winter.
Me too, Gigi. I'm with you 100%. Maybe we can go cover when you guys go to Tampa.
Yeah.
We'll come down there and cover.
Oh, that's good of Andre, isn't it?
Yeah.
Willing to go to Tampa.
Take one for the team.
Take one for the team.
Girl.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we talked about last time, too, and I want you to talk about this again. The website, the programs that Gigi's offers, this is, it's just incredible. Languages, just different things like that.
Everything from teaching a baby to crawl. Uh-huh. I mean, these are those muscles that I was talking about, engaging their muscles, helping them learn how to crawl. Like, when Gigi learned how to walk, she couldn't jump. That's what I think people don't understand, and people take having muscles for granted. You know, not being able to jump is just, I look at little kids who can jump, and I think, do you even know how lucky you are? Like, does your mom, does anybody even know?
Right.
It's jumping.
Right.
My kids literally, once Gigi finally learned how to walk, they had to teach her, like, the dynamics of jumping. Like, okay, down and up.
Right.
Down. For months they did it before she ever got air under her feet. You know, people don't understand how strong our kids are because they have to work so hard to do what comes naturally to all of us. So we start teaching them the walking, the crawling, talking. We do one-on-one speech therapy, one-on-one tutoring in literacy and math, fitness programs, career skills. We have Gigi University that is an 8-hour program 3 days a week. Confident You, Healthy You, Whole You, which totally reminds me of our NFL boys. And it's all about building yourself up from the inside out. You know, it's tough.
And Brent, these athletes, and that's what these kids are as tough as anybody you ever played with.
Tougher. Yeah, they're starting from a position that's, you know what, they just natural, normal things that we think about. You know, we've got to overcome certain things, but those are things that we put in front of ourselves. These are things that are put in front of them before they even know what's going on.
You know what I love, too, and you saw this at the gala, but these kids never stop smiling.
Yeah. Never.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why I so appreciate last time we were here.
Yeah.
I know, you know, it was a tough situation. I know you guys had a tough crowd afterwards because people, you know, there's a weird thing going on in our world that we're going to protect our, you know, there's a lot of human rights and there's a lot of things being protected, but we're not protecting our most vulnerable population.
Well, here's the thing. This is what you're referring to, and I don't want to relitigate it here, but there was an idiot comedian trying to get attention on Netflix who was throwing the R word around like it doesn't matter.
Well, and the 21st chromosome, which was now what they're doing is saying, I'm not using the R word. I'm talking, let's make fun of the 21st chromosome. That is specifically targeting individuals with Down syndrome.
Yeah.
And we're seeing
it's outrageous.
It's more and more in the schools.
So what was the follow-up on the story? Did you ever hear from Netflix?
We finally did once we got some attorneys involved, and we partnered up with Tim Shriver from Special Olympics International and Anthony Shriver from Best Buddies. And we're working on something, and I'm hoping it's going to be the resolve that we're looking for because the world needs to stand up and take notice that we can't make somebody who wears their diagnosis on their face a target. We can't allow people to tell people it's okay.
No, it's outrageous.
Like, we have to stop this. We protect animals better than we protect our youth and our kids with Down syndrome. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, and it's not as easy as just saying, well, Netflix has enough money. The bottom line is, I don't care how much money you have. You ought to look yourself in the mirror and go, am I doing the right thing or the wrong thing?
Right.
And the wrong thing is to give light and to give a platform to a creep like that.
Absolutely.
If you don't have the talent to do an act without doing that, then you don't have talent.
No. And what we've asked, take out the 1 minute segment that targets our kids.
Yeah.
It's a 60 minute segment.
Right.
You got 59 minutes.
I'm sure the other 59
comedy
aren't funny either, but maybe some people will watch them.
Right.
And that creep, by the way, is welcome to come here anytime and talk to me. I'd be happy to do that as well. But the good news is you're getting more and more attention for it, and that's a big deal.
We're getting the word out. I mean, it's important. You know, people can't just jump on the platforms that are popular and everybody else is on. We need to jump on the platform that needs us the most. It's not okay for this to continue to happen. It's not okay to make our kids targets.
That's exactly right.
And I'm so floored. I get emails and texts and Facebook messages in the schools that it's happening more and more that they're referring. You know, they're talking about this kid who made a killer dunk at the buzzer. And they were like, one of his friends goes, oh, yeah, why was a kid guarding you have Down syndrome? And then when he got called out, his first thing was, well, I didn't call him the R word.
Yeah, but here's the thing. And, Brent, you can speak to this.
Yep.
And, Dave, you know, you raise kids. you should never assume your kid is the good kid. Nope. I don't care how good they are at home. When you hear about bullying and stuff, you need to sit your kid down and look him in the eye and go, are you part of the problem or the solution?
Yeah.
Because too many times, not too many times, all the times. You got a bully, you got a parent at home who's either showing that behavior or ignoring that behavior.
Well, 100% of the time. Look, I'm 52, so my excuse is I grew up in the 70s, and it's just an excuse.
Yeah.
Because what we did in the 70s and what we said in the 70s, whether it be gender bias, whether it be whatever, sexual bias.
Yeah, not okay.
You know, we used words a lot of times. It was, we'd call names and we'd bully and we did all these things. And we grew up okay, but we look back now and say, that's not okay.
No, it's not okay. Yeah. It's not okay to hurt people. It's not okay to hurt people because you can.
Yeah.
And words hurt. It's not okay just to throw that nonsense around.
Yeah. That's why we're Generation G, brother.
That's right.
It's coming off.
That's right. Well, you know, I drew one on my hand.
Yeah. I need another Sharpie.
Yes, exactly right. Dave.
Brent, how many NFL players have gotten involved with this?
So we've got, the whole organization has, but we've got 12 guys that are showing up.
That's tremendous.
And, that's tremendous.
Actually, and they're you know, really guys that people are going to know. We got Wendell Davis from the Bears, Desmond Clark, Kurt Becker, hopefully have a Super Bowl ring. We got Jerry Fontenot, Anthony Heron from the Lions, Al Harris, Big Al, Otis Hudson from the Bengals, Corey Mays from the Chiefs, Bruce Heron from the Bears, Kenan Tatum from the Panthers.
How about that?
And the exciting thing about that is two of the guys on the list that are going to be coming, both have had their jersey number retired by the Bears.
Well, that's cool.
Absolutely. One of them's me.
Yes.
You guys know that?
I didn't actually realize.
Let's see.
Come on now.
I mean, I know it was a big year, but I didn't actually realize it was retired.
So the story is, when I first came there, I was number 98. And then I had two choices. And this is 1988. Okay. I had a choice of 83 or 89. And I couldn't wear 83. You know why? Willie Gault. I wouldn't wear it because it would make me look even slower. So I wound up wearing 89, coach's number.
Right. Yep. Tom Waddle's number.
Yeah. And, of course, he had the heart attack that year, which I didn't cause. And then they retired my number. And I saw Mike a couple years ago. I said, you know what? I'm so glad they retired our number.
Yeah.
And he said, no, agree? No. He goes, I love when kids wear it. And I said, Mike, I was kidding. So, yeah, me. And then, of course, Bruce Heron, great linebacker.
51?
51.
Yeah.
Guy, I don't know.
We got Butkus. That Butkus guy? Yeah, he seems like a familiar
guy. So you got two of us, you know. That's no HOFs behind our names, but I got J-H-O-F. I'm Jewish.
Well, you know that old joke, right? It's that pamphlet. It's a very small pamphlet of great Jewish athletes.
You know what they did for my Jewish Sports Hall of Fame? They put my bar mitzvah yarmulke in the...
That's great. And did it have a face mask?
It had the chin
strap. Just the chin strap.
Yeah.
Just the chin strap.
Right.
They'll catch on at Temple. It's just going to take a little longer. Well, it's great for you to do this, and I know how much you guys appreciate it, and how much Gigi appreciates.
It's
a wonderful
our pleasure. It's our honor.
And by the way, it's also good of everybody at your place. Plug the business again. What's it called?
GCG Financial.
Right. They accept all clients other than me.
Yes.
Who have some money to invest. Plug it again.
Okay. So the Gigi Spyhouse Gala tomorrow night, Rosemont Convention Center. Yep. This is, this is not your grandma's gala. This is for singles, for couples. It's a black tie event with a rockin' edge. Seventh Heaven is going to be rocking the dance floor. We have the best dance floor in town, the best receiving line. You are going to, from the minute you get in there, you're going to be hit with energy and love, and it lasts the entire night.
And you're going to have a message.
Am I wrong? Absolutely.
Yeah. You're 100% right.
Yeah. And we got the boys there. I mean, these guys are going to be there representing, and they're going to be there with the strength that these guys have, but they're not able to, you know, put into a football uniform or do anything else. Their strength is in what they give back to the world.
And you know what I hope, too, is I hope that we get some young parents who have maybe just gotten a Down's diagnosis who, you know, are looking for a place to turn.
We do have young parents. We have pregnant moms that come to our event. People who are pregnant just find out they have the diagnosis. And we have a brand new mom who's going to be there this time. And I told you last time, the average age to have a kid with Down syndrome is 28. So most of our families are first-time parents.
How about that?
Yeah. So they need that acceptance. They need support. They don't need to look on the internet for help and find hate.
Right. No, absolutely not. All right, the money to help you guys open more of these comes from the public. Donate online. Is that the way it goes?
Yeah, we don't have to get any government
or through the
funding,
gala, obviously, tickets.
It's through
the all the information is on the website, which is?
Yes.
GigiSplayhouse.org, and you can go right to the gala page, and then you could, there's a video of last year's gala, so you could see how we rock it out.
Right.
I think there's like 30 tickets left for tomorrow night's gala.
Sell it out. Let's go, people.
Let's do it. Yeah, it's a party and a half, and we got the boys. We cannot wait for them to represent.
We're all going to shower and be dressed up nice.
Yeah.
By the way, you haven't seen the robot until you've seen Brent do the robot.
Oh, there you go.
Last word.
Looking forward to it. I bet Gigi, how excited are you about this weekend?
Me too.
Yeah, there she is. She gets
I have a boyfriend coming.
Oh, great. She has a boyfriend going to the gala this
year.
I believe we've buried the lead.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Wrong group to tell this to, Gigi. These guys will be very protective.
I'm going to need to approve the young man at some point.
Yes. Well, she asked him to turn about in January, and they actually got voted. They got the most likes on a turnabout ask. Because you know these asks. It's like asking someone to marry you when you have to do these
asks. That's tremendous.
These dances.
Yeah. Yeah, like a
all right, don't give up the full identity, but what's his first name?
Sam.
Sam. He sounds like a quality guy to me.
We're going to have a talk with Sam.
You take care of it first, and I'll back you up.
We got it.
Great to see you. GigiSplayhouse.org. Congratulations. You're changing the world, kid. Keep it up.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much, guys.
And thank you, Brent. More coming up on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
9:44, we continue live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. I got aggravated when we were talking about the police vest thing. What was it, a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, a couple weeks ago when we found out that the police officers have to pay for their own vests and guns and gear and
We were talking about the allowance either needs to go up or we need to figure out a way to do this in a way where the stress doesn't fall on guys buying hand-me-down vests. Mm-hmm. When this should be a piece of mandatory equipment,
absolutely,
for life saving, that they don't have to worry about.
And these vests start at $500, Steve. $500 to $1,200. I mean, for a good bulletproof vest, you need to replace them every few years too.
Well, it takes good people to step up and fill the void when stuff like this comes up, because it's, you know, listen, cops are too busy to go, hey, what about me? What about me?
Right.
So the Aurelios family has done that, and President Joe Aurelio is here. First off, I'm sure before we get done talking, Joe, that you'll tell me what addictive you're putting in the sauce at Aurelio's, because you eat Aurelio's pizza you're doing something special there. Pull that microphone up a little bit there, will you? Talk right into that thing.
Got it.
Is this Grandpa's recipe?
Actually, it was my dad's recipe.
Your dad?
Yes. Okay. In 1959, he opened the first Aurelio's location in Homewood, Illinois, which is about 30 miles south of the loop here.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a four-table restaurant. He was the cook, the waiter, the answering the phones, delivering the pizzas. He'd tell people, I'll be right back. I'm going to run out of pizza and come right back. And in those days, they wouldn't leave.
Right.
And how many stores now?
We have 41 locations in six states right now. So
how about that? It's tremendous. I don't need to tell you that. We'll talk more about the pizza coming up. But what did you do to, in the family, do to decide to get behind the vest?
Well, starting back, my grandfather was a Chicago policeman in Bridgeport from 1935 to 1965. So we definitely have a family history. And I have five other family members in California and Arizona that are also on the police force. So we definitely have a police backing in our family. And we know how dangerous it is every day when you leave your house and you want to go home to your family, and we just want to help out to keep our policemen safe.
Not just having your grandfather as a cop, but just having a feeling for what that means as a family, I suppose, right? Because families send their loved ones out as cops, and you don't know if they're coming home.
Right, no, absolutely. And after I heard about the shooting of Commander Paul Bauer, it just struck me so hard. It really hurt. Paul Bauer was also a customer of ours. Mm-hmm. We have quite a few policemen that come in on a regular basis. We take very good care of them. Every time they come in, if I'm down here, I'll make sure I talk and thank them for what they're doing for us. And I did have a nice conversation with him one time, and it just really struck me that I got to do something to make a difference.
Well, it's the right thing to do. So what's Pizza Day going to be?
So what we're doing is we started last Monday, and it ends this Sunday. So we're in our home stretch.
Pizza Week.
This is Pizza Week. 20% of all our sales, dine-in, carry-out, and delivery from our 1212 Aurelio's Pizza location, South Michigan, will be donated to buy vests. So we set a goal of buying at least 10 vests, and we're halfway there as of today. But the weekend is our big sales time, so we're hoping offices will reach out today and order for their offices, make a difference.
Yeah, behind, come on, people, step up.
Get lunch, absolutely. Get dinner, and that South Loop location is wonderful. I know that's doing really well, too.
Yeah, it is, and it's a great spot. We have great parking right at 1212 South Michigan, the Park Michigan parking lot.
Yeah, and if you're listening
on the way to... Parking in Chicago, Steve.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Yes.
If you're listening on the way to work now and you're going, well, I got lunch plans, well, change your plans.
Mm-hmm. Right,
change
right.
your plans and make sure you're going to Aurelio's, 1212 South Michigan.
And if your business or office orders today, especially, and through the weekend, we'll make sure you're on the official letter of business that's supported, Get Behind the Vest, when we do give a official letter and a check presentation to the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation. So if you want to be part of it and get recognized, and it's a great cause. The men and women are out there every day protecting us, and I think it's time that we can help them out.
Absolutely.
There you go. I'm just curious, if somebody goes into any Aurelio store and says, listen, I can't get downtown, but here's $20 for the cause, can they get it delivered?
Well,
yeah, give it to the managers or something?
I'm sure, yes, they can do that, but also if you go to AureliosPizza.com,
you can donate online.
Have a Get Behind the Vest icon, you click on it, and you can donate directly to the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation.
Oh, that's perfect.
And the t-shirts that I brought here today, really nice looking t-shirts.
Andre, would you like to stand up and do a little modeling here?
So if you go on to AureliosPizza.com,
on the catwalk,
there's also a link to order t-shirts, and the money from that will also go to back the vet.
And if you're watching on CLTV, both Joe and Andrea wearing the t-shirt.
Yes, we have the Aurelio's logo. Yes.
Very nice.
Behind the Vest logo, the Chicago Memorial Police logo.
I asked him to bring in a petite for me, and he forgot to bring my size.
Yes.
We'll get that later. Joe, nice work.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for what you do.
Thanks for having us on today. It's a great cause.
Well, thanks.
Come on, Chicago.
Thank you, Joe.
And thanks for making great pizza.
Thank you.
1212 South Michigan Avenue all week long, but it's going to run out. Let's make sure we get that goal. Let's buy 10 new vests. Let's buy a lot more than 10. So let's get it done. Kevin in Flossmoor called up, and he said Aurelio's is the best, and he'll challenge anybody who challenges him on that. Ooh. And a bunch of texters as well.
Here comes Kendall Coyne with a shot. Score! 23 seconds into the third period, the United States is on the board.
.953, our new best friend, Kendall Coyne, live in studio. She's been nothing but great to us. Called from the Olympics after, well, winning a gold medal, which you're sporting today. Kendall, I got to tell you, I'm a little superstitious, and I believe if I didn't win it, I shouldn't even touch it, but it sure looks good on you.
Well, thank you, but you could touch it.
How great is it?
It's pretty surreal. It's been awesome to share with Chicago and just to see how excited everybody is.
Your life must be bananas now.
It's been pretty busy, but a good busy, and it's just exciting to see like hard work pay off and to just see what happens when you follow your dreams.
It's tremendous. Now, we were talking off the air a second ago. How much trash talking came from the Canadian team? They look like they were yapping a little bit.
There's quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not really my game because I can't get involved in that. But
got to focus.
Yeah, but there's quite a bit.
Did you have a sense of how good you guys were before you got there? I mean, I know you knew you had a shot, but did you realize how good this team was?
Yeah, absolutely. And going into the Olympics, we were the underdogs. Canada won the last four gold medals. That's fact. But we won the last four world championships in the last 4 years. Canada did beat us 5 games in a row during our Olympic tour.
Yep.
But if you look at history, that was whoever lost the most games during the Olympic tour actually won the gold medal. So we were like, all right, we have this going for us.
I know you're laser focused on the game, but describe, you know, the Olympic Village and the whole, I mean, you look like you're having so much fun on TV.
It is. The Olympic Village is a special place. It's a sanctuary at the Olympics. It's a place where you can feel yourself, calm, hang out with the other athletes. It's just so fun to learn about their sports, to watch them, to cheer for them, and especially being a representative of Team USA, there's nothing greater, no bigger honor as an athlete.
Yeah, and you know, this was not a great medal count Olympics for Team USA, even though we had the biggest contingent. I mean, you know, listen, you lose by a hundredth of a second in some sports.
Right.
It's crazy. But that, I think, in some ways, even made your guys win even more special because we're going, we need a gold and we need it now, and you guys delivered.
And along with, it's been 20 years since the U.S. women's hockey team has brought home a gold medal. So there was a little bit weight there. And I think also, too, just these Olympics were very special, regardless of medal count, with the unification of the South Korean North Korean, the hockey team. So just being able to view that was pretty special. And there was a lot that happened beyond medals, too.
Were you at all apprehensive, Kendall, before going to South Korea about traveling there? And were other athletes concerned at all?
Not at all. The USOC does a pretty good job giving us the groundwork of what to expect, where we're living, the accommodations, and just helping us prepare mentally before we get over there so we know what to expect. And one of our biggest secrets was, I don't know if I've ever told anyone, this was our dining hall. We had a secret dining hall, and our chef from the USOC, Flower, she was awesome over there and cooking for us. So we were unbelievably taken care of.
Did she get a gold medal?
She deserves one.
Yeah, right.
I wish.
There was no danger that any of them were going to wander to the DMZ, I don't think. You know, they were probably okay. Probably,
I would think.
Right. Anyway. Aside from the gold, which congratulations, and you guys are, you know, American heroes now, literally. What are you taking away from the games? Camaraderie?
The experience, being able to see athletes that I saw 4 years ago and seeing them 4 years later accomplish their dreams. One of the most happy moments I had was watching the Shibatanis receive a bronze medal. They're just awesome people, and saw them 4 years ago, and it's amazing to be around Team USA athletes and knowing how hard everyone works.
Yeah, and I don't want to short sell this either, because you brought it up and it's really sweet. The sports is a great unifier, and to have the North Koreans and South Koreans even skating together, regardless of what skill they have or don't have, was really special. I had to be kind of emotional, I would think.
It was very emotional, and it was something as a women's hockey player I was proud to be a part of. And,
right.
It was a special moment, and to say that you're at that Olympic Games is
crazy.
It has a lot of weight to it.
How about that?
Yeah, it definitely does.
Now, I know your life's gone bananas, and I know what a great partnership you have with the Blackhawks and what great friends they are, so I know you do and you will do a lot of stuff with them. But one of the other things, and I think we talked about this when you called us. You were nice enough to call us, I think, when the party was still going on. The impact this has on hockey for girls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think about when the women, I think it was 2000, right, when the women won the World Cup in soccer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Team USA was talking about, you know, this is so great for little girls who want to play soccer. Mm-hmm. Well, little girls who want to play hockey need heroes. Mm-hmm. You guys are it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and it's an amazing platform that we've worked really hard for, and I think it's something that all 23 of us take so seriously. A lot of us are here today because of the 98 team that won a gold medal, and we know that's why we're here. Cami Granato was my idol, my hero growing up.
How about that?
Right.
So knowing the way how she changed my life, I wouldn't be sitting here today without the impact she had on me. Knowing that you could have that impact on someone else is pretty special.
I want to say anything nice about your coach.
About my coach?
Yeah.
I mean, we had just a phenomenal staff all around, but I would have to put a shout out to our medical staff, our doctors, our trainers,
the whole deal.
Our equipment managers, our massage therapists. They're the team behind the team, and without them, I mean, they're working around the clock.
Speaking of the team behind the team, you got to have family support. You got to have people that love you. There's a big dude in the studio. You met this guy?
Yeah, quite a few times.
Yes. Talking about Michael, the NFL's Michael Schofield. And Michael, where are you playing this year?
I'm actually currently a free agent, so I'll be finding out next week where I'll be playing.
Yeah, how about that? Well, you guys got a busy life ahead. When are you getting married?
July 7th.
Oh, yay. It's
a couple weeks before camp somewhere, right?
Yeah, exactly.
How did you plan a wedding while you were getting ready for the Olympics?
Oh, it's been pretty busy.
you think?
We did a lot last summer and have a lot to do now.
How'd you guys meet?
We met working out, actually, after the last Olympics, and we both were just two college-aged people in the gym on a random day. And
did he have any game? Did he have a good pickup line? Anything at all?
No.
Did he have a move?
He was just really sweaty.
last quick one, Dave.
All right, real quick for both of you. Who gets more nervous watching the other compete?
I think it's me, though. We both are very... It's much harder to watch than actually playing it.
I'll bet.
You have no control over the game when you watch.
Yeah, I bet.
I would say, probably him, because he's only on the field half of the time. Like,
and you're
offense,
out there.
Defense, and we're on the offense, defense, and so.
Yeah, you do it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you seem like a good dude.
Thank you.
I approve.
Can I ask one more thing? So we're on your registry now. Would you prefer Dyson or the Garmin steamer?
Ooh.
Because those are both still available.
The steamer, because his shirts are always wrinkled.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So we'll get the steamer. That's our wedding present.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you, guys.
Congratulations, you gold medal winner. You.
Thank you.
America's proud of you.
Thanks.
And welcome home.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be home.
And Michael, congratulations. You guys have good luck with the career, obviously.
Thank you so much.
But most importantly, have a great life together.
Oh, we will.
Thank you. We hope we see you again.
No. You're always welcome here. Yeah, you're always welcome here. Thanks for winning the gold. Bill and Wendy next on 720 WGN.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Are you a little distracted?
No, it's funny. Is I think Sandberg is making Michael, the NFLer, take the pizza.
Yes, yeah. He is. Yep.
Just because he's big doesn't mean he has to eat the pizza.
He said, were those guys serious about offering me pizza?
Take That's it with you, said. Guys. Take
he's
it
taking
with
it, but to see, he's carrying her purse as well. He's the best fiancé ever.
That's hilarious. Put the pizza in the purse, Michael.
The professional consultants at Permaseal will inspect your foundation inside and out. 40 years plus experience, quality products, greatest value. Hey, they got some of my money. I've used Permaseal time and time again. Get a dry basement or crawl space fixed up good. You know who to call. Permaseal, 800-421-SEAL, 800-421-7325 or permaseal.net. And I don't know why I did an Andy Griffith there. Get it fixed up good.
Oh, good. Good sealer. Good sealer.
I didn't even notice it. That's the weird thing.
It was weird. How you guys doing?
Good.
You're fine, Steve. Welcome back.
Thank you.
This town is empty without you. Empty.
Very much.
Ghost town.
Yeah.
You were gone?
That's my Wendy. That's right. You guys are on right now.
Right now.
We're going to come back Monday and do this over.
Oh, all right.
See if we can fix some of the holes.
All right.
See you then.